Hello and welcome to the Morro Bay Planning Commission meeting. This is the meeting for November 5th, 2019. We're at the Veterans Memorial Building at 209 Surf Street. We will soon have a full commission, so we have a quorum, and so I'll call the meeting to order. No problem. Can we please have a moment of silence? All right, thank you very much. Please stand, face the flag, and begin the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. We have planning commissioner announcements, and I've been given the task to announce our Thanksgiving dinner. This will be at November 28th, Thanksgiving Day, and from 1 to 3 p.m., and it's free for everyone and all. It's really a great gig, guys. So, you know, if you would like to help, or would, you know, are looking for a place to have a little community on Thanksgiving, food's great. I've helped out there before, and it's a great place to sit and have dinner. And if you have wish to help out, call the number that's 805-772-4421 and offer to help, or call that for if you'd like to have a meal delivered. There'll be volunteers delivering meals, so there's meals to go, too. So this is a great thing that Morro Bay gets together and does every year. Any other planning commissioner announcements? Okay.
You know, it's not super local, but the veterans of Foreign War, Napomo Branch, will be having a pancake breakfast from 8 to 11 at the VFW in Napomo, which is off of Taft and Thompson. So if you can, if you're out that direction and you can make it, please do.
Okay, great. Anybody else? Okay. So this is the time we usually set aside for public comment. This is typically reserved for items that are not on the agenda. If you'd like to speak to an item not on the agenda or items that are on the consent calendar, please step forward and state your name. Okay, going, okay, gone, okay, thank you, moving on. We have no presentations, so we have the consent agenda or consent calendar. Do we have anybody wishing to pull any items off of that or comments on that? Okay, can I have a motion?
I'll move to approve the consent calendar.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay, any discussion? Nope. Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, motion passes. Okay, we're moving on to public hearings. This is item number B1. It's case number MAJ19-03. It's the modification of a UPO 481 and CPO 544 at 210 Atascadero Road. Do we have a staff report?
We do. Just don't have any picture. There we go.
Got technology at least.
Yes. Thank you. So this is a major modification of an existing conditional use permit and development permit that you approved last October 2018. So it's really a change of use in an existing building. And I've always wanted to add this slide, but now I have a real good reason to add this slide. This is at Planning Commission because the original project included 1,100 square feet of arcade game area. And our zoning code defines arcade as anything with more than three game machines, and that requires additional review. Additionally, the arcade areas within 300 feet of a school or a playground require Planning Commission review and City Council decision. So that's why this was scheduled for Planning Commission and originally planned to go on. After we did the public notices, the applicant withdrew his request for arcade. So the application is really just a change in interior use from one thing to another, and he is now opting only for batting cages as the change in use. So the zoning is CVS PD, and it's located within the Coastal Appeals jurisdiction. And this is the approved site plan that you approved last October. This is the parking lot plan for the new use, and this shows the parking lot plan is basically the same as was approved back in October. It has 28 spaces, including two accessible. The new use only requires 16, so there's more than adequate parking. This is a summary of the modification in uses from October to the present. The small cafe and the small merchandise area is the same, serving beverages and food, including beer and wine. There's an office, storage spaces, and public restrooms. But the vintage classic car display area, which was the majority of the building, is now changing to six batting cages. And that's two softball and four baseball. This shows you site plan of the building with the approved uses. So you can see the majority of the area was vintage car display. The other uses are the same as in the current proposal. This is the current proposal, and the area that was designated for arcade will now just be, they'll move the customer service area for the batting cages and expand the batting cage area and fill that space. So staff recommends that the Planning Commission approve the project by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 26-19, which includes findings and conditions of approval for MAJ 19-03 to allow the change in use as reflected on the plans submitted to the City of Morro Bay. And the applicant is here. He does not have a presentation, but he is available if you have any questions.
Okay, great. Do we have any questions for staff?
Yep. Nancy, does the beer and wine preclude students from entering the facility, or are they segregated such that there's a separation between those two uses?
That's really an ABC regulated thing, but I believe that there are certain hours when it's students can come in and use the batting cages. There probably is going to be a restriction for where you can move about with your beer and wine. You probably have to stay in the cafe area.
On the last time we saw this, we talked about softening the building a little bit with some landscaping up front, you know, on the front facade at least of the building. And I don't see any changes on this or any landscape.
It's still conditioned. This is a modification of that permit, so it's still subject to all of those original conditions of approval.
Okay. Yeah, I would like to have seen a little bit more of a plan to show what they were going to do to soften that front facade, especially on the Atascadero roadside. Mm-hmm. So, okay. All right, do we have any? Well, let me open this to public comment. And seeing as the applicant will wish to answer questions, we'll open it for anybody that wishes to speak to this for public comment. And then we'll reserve the right to ask questions of the applicant. Does anybody else wish to speak to this item? Okay. Seeing none, do we have any questions for the applicant?
I had a I was looking at the area that I think is for some additional batting installations that aren't going to be installed initially. And I had an experience traveling recently where the local city government it took a space over. It was a cannery, and they created an incubator space, and it was populated by artists and ceramic artists and photographers and clothing designers, very small spaces. So it was just a suggestion before you fill the remaining two spaces with batting cages, if there isn't the possibility of using it as an incubator space for other people who would be interested in a relatively small space, inexpensive rent to, start their entrepreneurial activities as artists or craftsmen. The community, I think, sort of needs something in the way of low cost. Just a thought.
Okay. Any questions for the applicant? Or?
Yeah, I just wondered, what is the nature of the separation between the cages and the liquor area, beer and wine area? Yes.
Yes, please. Please come forward.
My name's Larry Gazanaw. I own the Flippo's building. I live at 297 Bradley Avenue, Morro Bay. Anyway, we don't have a plan up there, but...
Good. Can we get the floor plan up?
The front 40 feet of the building will be the restrooms and the offices and the cafe and the batting cage counter. And then there will be a four-foot door. The wall goes all the way across.
Yeah.
This button. See this right?
Okay.
Okay, there you go. And I'll go put that.
Okay. We need something simpler.
Here we are. Oh. Nope. Next one. Next one. No, next one. Yeah. Right there. That's good. Oh. Go back to the other one. Right there. Okay, right here.
So if you could speak from the
microphone. Yeah, please be. Yeah.
Right there is where the wall will be that will separate all the batting cages from the front. There'll be a sign saying alcoholic beverages are not to be in the cage area. Yeah. Okay, and so the building actually lends itself, this diagram is actually incorrect. They're all going to go from here, where the pitching machines will be throwing this direction. They all will be that way, and they'll be 20 foot wide instead of what industry normally is 14 foot wide, but 20 foot will be more enjoyable for a batter. And and the girders in the ceiling are 20 foot wide, so it lends itself to just hanging the nets from there.
Okay.
So that's the simplest thing, least expensive, makes sense. And so there'll be four baseball ones that are basically 60 feet long, and two softball that are basically 45 foot long. So what was the other question?
Go ahead.
No, I was just interested in the flow of the students versus
the people. Oh, the students. Well, you know, we'll put a sign up, and then we'll just, you know, be regulated. And actually, we're probably only going to have beer because ABC requires dinner to have wine. And we're going to sell packaged sandwiches, packaged everything. We're going to see if we can sell frozen pizza, warm them up for the high school kids and have donuts. And but we're not going to really prepare anything if we don't have to. And so the beer is just because, you know, a dad bring is his. See, the customer is the adult, and the kids are not the customer. So they bring their child, and they, so the dad, this kid goes for a half hour hitting in the cage, and he gets bored. He wants to go sit and have a beer. And so we don't really intend to be selling a whole lot of, you know, like a bar. It's just, you know, kind of for guys who bring their kid, or you know, it's just not that big of a thing. We're more going to have, we're going to sell coffee, espresso machine, that kind of thing, and all we're going to have all kinds of sodas for the, you know, in refrigerators. So they take them out and they buy them. So we intend to have our customers be the surfers, the high school kids, the RV park, which is part of, you know, the property itself. And then the Lila Kaiser Park in the back there, we should get a lot of customers from there and from the high school. And so.
Okay. What kind of landscaping are you doing up in next, up against the building on the front of the building? It, you don't have any details of that at all.
Can you go back to where the parking lot is?
We can see okay. It right at the front
well,
there.
Well, that's. Okay, so as you come out right here, we will surround this. This is a cover over the front. Mm-hmm. So we will be surrounding this with planters. And because the way it works is this section right here will also be where we can have outside tables. We can have 125 square feet extra outside. And so we'll make that look nice. And then along the back here, we intend this part to be landscaped right in through here. Okay. There's no parking there.
Right.
And the other side, we have to go up against the building, so I don't think we're going to be able to put anything there. In the front, we have two driveways and one in the middle. We'll have landscaping, and you know, we intend to try to make it look nice. And then on the west side, at the end of the parking, there's island area, and we'll put some landscaping there. So, you know, there'll be some life.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for the applicant?
I'll just make a comment. I'm really pleased to see an active use for the space rather than the passive of the old cars, which are always fun. But this really provides an activity, especially for young and teenage people as well as college age and older. So.
Well, you know, I do play baseball in local men's league. Okay. So older guys can use it too.
Yes.
We'll let them, and women, I'm hearing, you know, softball,
oh, yeah.
Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I look forward to swinging a few. All okay. Right, well, thank you very much. I think we'll bring it back to the commission. Okay, do any discussion?
No, I agree that it's a great thing to see it used and yeah. To help the visitor serving commercial we've got on that street.
Yeah, I'll agree. It's a good change of use. I like the idea of the batting cages in there. I think it'd be.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I mean, you know, there's Parks and Rec has softball leagues out there, so maybe consider. I don't want to say working the hours around that, but, I mean, you know, we're out there late. So if you could stay open late so we can get warmed up, that'd be awesome.
and likewise, I appreciate the fact that it's going to be some greater activity in the facility and it'll be more engaging for the community. So I think it's a great idea.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I'll move that the commission approve the application for a major modification, MAJ 19-03, of conditional use permit UPO 481 and coastal development permit CPO 544 for this project.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? Can we call a question?
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Stewart?
Aye.
Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
Commissioner Ingrafia?
Aye.
Chair Lohr.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to item number B2. This is CUP 19-12. This is a conceptual review of 405 Atascadero Road. Are we ready with a staff report?
Yes.
No. Okay, thank you.
There was public comment, and I handed you copies of that, and there were some back on the back table as well. This is a proposed 35-unit affordable apartment, and this is a conceptual review, so no decision today. The overview, it's 35 affordable apartments, 17 one-bedroom, 9 two-bedrooms, 9 three-bedrooms. Its proposed affordability criteria is extremely low income, very low income, and low income tenants. The site is 0.94 acres. The design is four buildings around a central courtyard, playground, and garden area. There is one two-story building and three three-story buildings. The parking is a 35-car parking lot with access to and from Sunset Avenue, and it'll have an outdoor bike parking area. This shows you the zoning. The site is kind of in the middle, and it's MCR R4 PDSP, so it has everything. It is adjacent to duplex residential on the north and CVS on the south. The development standards are R4 development standards apply, even though that's the secondary zoning. The use is allowed in MCR, but it specifies that R4 development standards will apply. The density allowed is up to 24 acres or units per acre. R4 allows maximum height of 30 feet. It's also in the North Main specific plan area, which encourages 25 feet maximum height, two-story over semi-subterranean and subterranean parking. The parking requirement is 35. And I think that's wrong. The parking required is, I believe it's 53, and there's another slide for that. The affordable housing goals, just to review, is to ensure that development standards are not a constraint to the new multifamily housing. Recent examples are we have an affordable senior housing project at 555 Main Street, and it was approved for a density equal to 53 units per acre. We also had a mixed-use development at 600 Morro Bay Boulevard that was approved for a residential equal to 41 units per acre, and one of those 13 residential units was affordable. So this is a review of the site plan and a little bit on the affordable housing goals of the city. It's to allow flexibility in development standards such as height, parking, and setbacks for multifamily housing, and to allow fast tracking of permits, fee assistance, or combinations of modifications and developer incentives to encourage affordable housing projects. And that's from the Housing Element 2014 through 2019. This shows you the site. There's a proposed Sonic Burger on the corner, existing gas station and liquor store across the street, mobile home park on the south and on the east. Duplex residential on the north, and then I did point out there's a new development on Sunset that is, I believe, a condo, for sale condo or for rent condo unit that was approved for 30-foot height, and that is also MCR R4 and subject to the same requirements. It's also in the North Main specific plan area, so it had the same goal for 25 feet or less. This is the development standards for the R4 zone, and this shows the front setbacks are met, the rear setbacks are met, the exterior side, it has three streets around it, so it's got two exterior sides, It is a little short on the setback on Rockview, but part of that, I think, is because of the terrain. But it's 60 feet on Atascadero Road. The height, as we've discussed earlier, is 30 feet in the R4, but the SP overlay encourages 25 feet or less, and the proposed is 30 feet. The density in the R4 is 24 units per acre, which allows 22 units for this site. The project qualifies for a 35% density bonus, which is an additional 8 units, which would allow 30 units. They're asking for 35. The parking, here we get the real numbers, is the requirement on R4 is 35 covered spaces plus 18 uncovered spaces for a total of 53. And it allows for affordable projects for the guest parking to be waived. What they have proposed is 35 uncovered parking spaces, including 2 accessible. So R4 versus MCR, this is really talking about the setback on Rockview, where they have 10 feet and the strict requirements required 15. The site has 2 exterior side yards, Rockview and Atascadero Road. The MCR exterior side yard setback is 5 feet, or 10 feet if across the street from a residential use, which in this case, the Rockview side is across the street from a residential use. However, the R4 exterior side yard setback is 20% of the depth of the site, which is about 190 feet, with a maximum of 15 and a minimum of 10. And when I look at the primary zoning being MCR and the secondary R4, that's a pretty significant difference in the setback requirement for an exterior side yard. So the proposed project has a 10-foot setback on Rockview and 60 feet on Atascadero Road. The planned development overlay allows for site-specific determinations of setbacks, so there's flexibility in your decision on what to accept for a setback. We're starting over again. I exceeded my talking allowance. So the next slide is when we get there is just talking. It's just more talking. Exceptions and incentives. Let's see if we can get there. There we go. So density, allowed density in the R4 zone plus bonus density of 35% equals 32 units. And that seems like the math is wrong also. And I apologize for that. It's 30. This project's entitled to a developer incentive pursuant to the affordable housing section of the municipal code, one of which can be a density bonus greater than the amount allowed in that code, which is 35%. So the 35% actually gets us to 30, and they would like 35. The height, which I think we've talked about maybe enough, is 30 feet in R4. The SP overlay states that in general, the maximum height shall not exceed 25 feet, but can go up to 30 feet to allow roofline variations. So again, the Planning Commission has the ability to approve a 30-foot height based on the above provision. Additionally, a developer incentive can also be used to adjust the development standards to make a project economically feasible. Parking requirement. Specifically for low-income housing, 35 covered, 18 uncovered for 53 total. Again, the Planning Commission has the ability to approve a parking reduction based on the provisions of the planned development overlay zone under the criteria that the parking reduction will provide a better design and greater public benefit. And the project is within 1 mile to kind of goods and services, which would be downtown Morro Bay, and a tenth of a mile from 2 different bus stops. Project review, the site borders three public streets. The site has significant slope in the northeast corner, and the site is known as an archaeologically sensitive site and was designed specifically to have a lesser impact on the site as far as excavation. And this is the material board, which I believe if you picked up plans, you have a larger copy. And this is a conceptual review, so we're looking for guidance, comments, recommendations for the projects.
I'm going to weigh in here. So because it is a conceptual review and you're not making any decisions this evening, you don't have discretionary permits in front of you and it wasn't noticed as such, we're interested in all of your independent comments. But the intent here is not to generate consensus by the commission. It's really to provide your comments. We would like you to comment on all of those items individually. A little bit of a nuance, but it's just not the point is not to do a lot of consensus building. It's really more just your independent thoughts on the project as it relates to the items that are in front of you, that type of thing. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
That sounds good. Ground rules. at this point, do we have any questions for staff? Or do we have any ex parte communication?
I had a conversation with Patty Denton, the Salinan Tribal Administrator, and I also had a brief conversation with Valerie Levulette, who was the Caltrans archaeologist.
Okay. Any questions for staff? Michael?
Nancy, with it being aimed at the income levels, do we have any control or would the developer have any control over who actually buys those in terms of traditional family versus four young people who might go together as an entity to buy that, who might fit the economic profile?
They're rental, so they're not for sale. And the applicants here, and they can speak to, I know that it's low-income housing tax credit funded, and it'll have income restrictions and verifications. I don't think it's targeted to any specific age group.
Okay. That's all I've got.
Susan? Any questions? Joseph?
I have a question with respect to the rights and obligations in terms of excavating Native American relics. I'm not sure if I should ask you or I should ask the applicant, depending on who knows something about that.
I think that part is still to be resolved.
Yeah, so the point there is this is a concept review, so really getting input on pretty much all of the things that are on the board there, and really not, we're working through that process right now. There's studies involved with that and outreach to the various Native American tribes and consultation, and those things are ongoing. So we'll have that wrapped up for you in the form of an environmental document that goes along with this when we bring it back for discretionary review.
Jesse, any questions at this point?
I did have a question about the archaeological part of this, because it seems to be that's the most pertinent thing in the eyes of the community at this point. I mean, I've gotten a lot of comments from the public, and most of them have been about that. So that seems to be on the mind of those that are interested in this project. so I'm happy to comment on these.
Well, let's just
right,
go
I'm
for
just saying
questions.
I'm happy to comment on this. I'm just stating that for the record. So.
Okay, great. At this point, then we'll bring the applicants up to open up public comment. Who would like to do the presentation?
Hi, my name's Scott Smith. I'm the Executive Director of HASLO, the Housing Authority of San Luis Obispo, and I'm not going to do the presentation. I'm going to turn it over to our architect to do that, but I just want to tee it up and let you know what's going on, what we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish, sort of what Nancy was saying, but just to let you know, I'm no stranger to Morro Bay. I lived in Morro Bay when I first moved to the area several decades ago. Then I worked with a nonprofit organization for quite a while and developed most of the affordable housing that's in your town. The two senior projects behind what's now Spencer's, which used to be Young's Giant Foods, the Sequoia family apartments out there. So I'm very familiar with the city, and I'm glad to be back here. It's been a long time since you had any affordable housing really developed. Those projects I'm talking about were in the 90s, I believe. So we all know it's a big challenge. I'm proud of this city and your council. You're involved in the Homeless Service Oversight Council, which some of you may have heard of. Housing is such a huge issue countywide. So we're trying to address that. These are going to be a permanent community resource. There's going to be a 55-year deed restriction recorded on the property, so they cannot be used for anything else. That deed restriction and compliance with it gets audited more than once a year by a variety of entities to make sure it's in compliance. There's signed lease agreements with every occupant. They will be rentals. But one of the reasons it's been so long since anything has gotten done is because it is so incredibly difficult, as we all know, throughout California. But, you know, in really nice communities like this, it's particularly hard. So, and part of that is because costs are so high. Land is so expensive. So we're trying to come up with something that's economically viable. And so the flexibility that the city can show in its policies is really what, not only in Morro Bay but other locations, what makes or breaks a project in its ability to go forward. So with that, I'm just letting you know I'm here to answer any questions, but I'd like to just turn it over to Tom, who's got sort of a more prepared type of presentation. Thank
okay,
you.
Great.
Well, okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Tom Jess with Aris Studio Architects. This is a project that and a project site that we've been working on for quite a while, but we're very excited about what we're able to bring forward today. And thank you very much for the opportunity to present this. I think Nancy did a good job of walking through the general overview of it, so I'm going to try not to duplicate a lot of the information you've already been presented with. What I do want to do is just kind of talk a little bit about the setting, and the archaeology has been mentioned. That's a big driving force in how this whole site was designed. I mean, we've worked back and forth with the archaeologist a number of times with the Native American representatives and developed the site plan in conjunction with them. So that's kind of what drove the force here, drove the idea here. I'm going to try not to shut it off, but this area down here was considered a very highly sensitive area. And this area up here, there's a gentle slope, and then it's much steeper back here against the side. So what we did, well, first, let me just kind of walk you around the site. Just I know everyone's familiar with it, but just kind of walking from Atascadero Road back. This is the mobile home park. This is Atascadero Road, and we're actually on the frontage road, so we're not on the main road itself. This is the site, and then you can see that slope that we were talking about in the back corner there, up near Rockview. This is the site, the future Sonic Burger site that was located there. We've labeled it just as future commercial. And as you start going up Rockview, this is the corner of Sunset and Rockview. You can see it's kind of developed a little bit further down, but this part's still fairly undeveloped, the road, the edges are. Some of the adjacent houses, you can see they sit quite a bit higher than the road. Rockview's fairly steep, and they sit up above there. Mostly their backyards facing onto Rockview. And then this is the mobile home park from the top looking down. So just what is the project overall? It's a 100% affordable for rent apartment. The just to clarify one point with the density bonus, the 35% density bonus that you're allowed per the state density bonus law and the municipal code, the is based on providing 11% of the units at very low income. We're providing 100% of the units at either very low, low, you know, or extremely low. So what we're asking for is to continue the ratio of the affordable to include a higher percentage. But in exchange, we're providing a lot more affordable than is required. It's owned and professionally managed by HASLO, the Housing Authority, and it's located on a transportation corridor and close to numerous amenities. So it's a good location for this. As was mentioned, there's good bus stops there. It's close to the high school. It's close to a lot of the businesses. There's a total of 35 apartments. Nancy already went through the mix, so I'll kind of skip through that. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is the ample, secure outdoor area. That's kind of another focal point of the design, is that central courtyard. And I have a couple slides we can kind of talk to that. And as we mentioned, I know that there was some feedback from some of the correspondents regarding parking. And the state density bonus law really dictates that it kind of takes that jurisdiction and moves it up to the state as opposed to at the local jurisdiction. And we're provided three incentives and we're proposing to use one of those incentives for the parking reduction to reduce the parking requirement to one uncovered parking space per unit for a total of 35 parking spaces for 35 apartments. So here's kind of the overall site design. You can see the parking is entered off of Sunset, and here's the 35 parking spaces along this way. We do pull it back off the street, and there's plenty of room for landscaping, which we intend to do across there to create a buffer there. And we are going to be making improvements, you know, around the site. So what's now currently just kind of the asphalt bleeds into the dirt, we're going to do really nice improvements all the way along there. And you can see that there's also a landscape area here down at the bottom corner of the site, and then along Rock View as well. So it's really, really buffered well with landscaping around the sides. There's two main pedestrian entrances into the project. One is off of Sunset here, and one is from the parking lot. And then this corner building is the amenity building. This is where the ground floor, where the leasing office is, where the management office and recreation room would be down in this area. And as I mentioned, it's really focused around this courtyard. So here's an enlarged view of the courtyard. Within the courtyard, we tried to create three distinct activity zones. There's an active activity zone with a play structure and grass area that would be much more of an active area. This is kind of a middle ground. There's a barbecue area, some tables and chairs. And then over here is a little bit more quiet, reflective area. It's a little bit... this tree is going to be a focal tree. You can see it kind of ties in on the axis of both of the pedestrian entrances. So whenever you walk in, this is kind of the focal point there. And that's more of a quiet sitting area with benches and so forth. The second and third floor have the units around the perimeter, and they all have an open walkway that looks down into that courtyard. The architecture is really derived by trying to pick up a lot of the vernacular, a lot of the coastal character, trying to make it very much a Morro Bay project. The materials are board and batten siding, lap siding. We have large windows for lots of natural light. This is the view of the pedestrian entrance coming in off of Sunset. And then as you turn the corner, this is the corner on Sunset and the parking lot. And the amenity space that we were talking about is here on the ground floor. I think I have a little bit of view of that. But you can see there's a ton of articulation. It's broken up into different massings. It's not one big, long, linear building or roof line or at any point. There's a lot of awnings that provide shadows and shade for the windows. And here's that amenity space that we were talking about. This is the pedestrian entrance walking in from the parking lot. And then up above, we just expanded the walkway a little bit and created a little outdoor space here on the second floor. And we felt this was a really good location for the outdoor space because it doesn't overlook any of the adjacent neighbors. It's on the corner between the parking lot and Sunset, so it'll have a really nice view, but it won't interact with any of the neighbors or overlook any of the neighbors. I included a few elevation drawings just to show you that we truly do have a four-sided architecture here. There's no back of the building. The architecture character wraps its way all the way around the building. This is facing Sunset. This is back on Rock View. Now, because Rock View is quite a bit higher than our site, the bottom portion of this is actually going to be below Rock View. But that doesn't change the fact that we're still carrying the architecture all the way around. And you can see here where we don't have any apartments along this side, what we're doing is we're stepping the building up that slope there so that we're not having to excavate into that hill in order to build the project. And that's kind of one of the key sensitive things was we really wanted to keep the excavation down as low as possible. So that's one of the things that's driving our request or the 30-foot height is that we wanted to keep the building as high as we can to minimize the excavation. If we truly wanted to keep it at 25 feet, we could have. We could have dropped the whole building, but it would have required a lot more excavation, which on an archaeological site is never a good idea. So that's kind of what was driving that. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. And we have Mike Burke and Jim Rendler here with Ownership Group. So we have everybody here that can answer your questions, hopefully.
Okay, I think we'll hear from the rest of the community and then bring you up afterwards for questioning.
Great, thank you.
So thank you for the presentation. At this point, we'll open it up for the rest of the public comments. So if you have, please step forward and state your name, and We'll have 3 minutes.
My name is Darrell Griggs. I own the property next door, the trailer park. Yep. And we're concerned about the height. It's going to block all of our views and the parking, especially the parking. There are going to be 35 cars or 35 parking spots, and there'll probably be 70 cars there. The density was only supposed to be 24. Now it's going to be 35, and there is no parking. The streets down there are packed with cars all the time, and we don't know where the additional cars are going to go. So I propose that they keep it down to two-story, keep it down to the 24 minimum, and keep it down to 50 parking spaces. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
Betty Winholtz. Came up without my glasses, so I'll try to do a good job here. I agree with the previous speaker. I think it should only be 25 feet, blocking the mobile home park, blocking the people behind. I really appreciate the fact that they don't want to go down and disturb too much of the ground. That's sensitive of them, but we should not have that height limit there. I know that some three stories have been allowed, and I'm not sure how that happened, and I don't think it's appropriate. Also, I have to object to the massness of the corners. That does not feel like Morro Bay to me, these big posts on the end. I like that he's trying to break it up so it's not a massive wall, but I don't think that's Morro Bay architecture. I too would have concerns about the parking. I would much rather see more parking and less landscaping. I think that will be more useful for the neighborhood. I think you can still get some landscaping in, but I think if you can develop more parking spaces, that's more important. I also, my dad used to live in a place where there was a center core play area with houses around it, but what they did was they put the parking on the outside all the way around. To have all the parking at one end so the people who live on the far end have to carry their groceries down there, have to carry their laundry or whatever it is, I think having all that parking at one end is not helpful for the people who live on the far end. I'm really pleased that it's all low-income housing. I think that's great that Haslow's being in here, and those would be my concerns.
Yep, thank you. Next, please. Please step forward.
Hello, my name is Iantha Miner, and I live in Morro Bay, in fact, very near the proposed site. And I have a number of concerns. Some have already been addressed, and that is the fact of, number one, the parking. I live so near the area, I already know that we have a very bad problem with parking, with the existing cars that are there. And to add the influx of, first of all, we know that every family has at least two cars per family, and suggesting that there is units with three bedrooms, that certainly would lend itself to multiple cars per family. So the fact that there are 35 parking spaces, which we have learned from the planning, it looks like we went in and counted them, and there's really only 33, not 35. Where are those extra cars going to be parked? Number two concern is the traffic there, which is already very congested. We have early morning traffic, all day traffic from commuters coming in, evening traffic. The high school students are constantly walking that intersection during lunchtime, before school, after school. And it looks like from your plans that the only exit is directly from Sunset, which feeds into 41, which is very near the intersection of Atascadero Road and Highway 1. So that just brings that much more congestion. We have a lot of visitors on the weekend, and that whole area is completely backed up from Thursday on. So I'm wondering what kind of traffic studies have been made to adhere to that problem as far as traffic. And third, it's for, as I understand, low income. But what do you consider low income? What is that amount of dollar? And what other screening processes are you determining for these people that move in? So I'm highly concerned with that. And then also the three-story structures, that is not Morro Bay. That is not the feeling that we want to have. Visitors come here to, for a laid-back experience, and to see a structure like that is not what they're used to. So for the perspective of North Morro Bay residents, the immediate residents right around that area, and also visitors coming into Morro Bay, I think this is a detrimental project, and I am highly objected to it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
Good evening. My name is Charles Harkins. I live very close to where this project will be going in. I get the height restrictions, but when I looked at the plans say 70 feet, 30 feet above natural grade plus 43.55 equals 73.55. So I don't think that these buildings are going to stay at 30 feet. They're going to be up 70 feet, and that's going to be detrimental to that whole area also. Parking, a serious issue. Where I live, there's, let me see, 15 people. We have 7 or 8 parking spaces in front. Those are always filled. If there's guests that come by, those are taken. And some of the people in our area have 3 cars each, and there's only 2 drivers. So when I look at this housing project, where are they going to park? There's no place. You can't park on Atascadero Road. You can't park on the frontage road. There's visitors that come into the trailer park that park out there with boats, and that's just the way the weekends go. But to put 75, maybe 100 more people in there is going to be just disastrous for the foot traffic, for the traffic that comes into town, for the whole intersection of 41 and Main. That whole area, like the other person said, Iantha, in the weekends and the weekdays, it's packed up. You know what happens? What do people do? They take that left turn lane, and then they just haul down that lane till they get to the stop sign. Every day, it's like somebody's going to get killed there. I mean, it's just, I've been almost run over twice. It's just ridiculous. So to put more people in there and more vehicles, I just feel that that's not going to work in that area. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please. Okay.
Hi, my name's Charles Arnold. I live in the mobile home park that's east of this development. I'm really concerned about a lot of things with this development. I'm concerned about the density of it. I'm concerned about the parking. I understand that the architects have to shoot for the stars when they're building something like this because they know they're probably going to have to back it off some. But I get really frustrated when I hear them say, well, parking's not under your purview anyways. It's up to the state. And you don't have any say over that, but you still have say over density, okay? And density is going to impact parking. And I think that's something that you should consider when you're doing this, because, I mean, if the Housing Authority of San Luis Obispo County wants to be a good neighbor to Morro Bay, they should really think about maybe taking this thing down to 2 stories and having enough parking and some realistic parking so that we can all be good neighbors to one another after it's done. All right. Rockview is currently unpaved. All right. The part of it that is paved only has parking on one side of the street because it's not wide enough to have parking on both sides of the street and have cars. And 35 cars in a parking lot, there's going to be so much overflow parking on the streets. And, you know, I just don't see where they're going to put all the cars because you can say that 1 car per apartment, but that's unreal. It's not realistic. So anyways, I guess I'm asking you guys to consider the things that you can control. What's your density? You know, the amount of apartments. If they were to just knock a floor off this thing, you get the density level down to something that's more manageable including the parking, then I think it would be good for everybody involved. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
My name is Worthington Vogel. I just moved to Morro Bay in September. I came here because of the charm of a small coastal community. What you're showing me here is just going away from that. I urge you to think about that. I think there's a lot of very nice places that are losing their charm. I think San Luis Obispo downtown is starting to struggle with that. We want to keep that look, that coastal look, the small community. This is too large. It looks like something out of L.A., San Francisco. Too many units. There's too many cars. We're squeezing too much into a small space. It should be half that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next, please. Okay. Anybody else wish to speak? All right. Do we have questions for the applicant? Joseph?
Yes, I do have questions for the applicant. Tom would,
yeah,
be the,
Tom
would be the person. One's fairly simple. With respect to the extension of the height limit to 30 feet for a more attractive roof line. This has come before us before, and I just used a very simple test. So if you were to modify the design so that it had a very flat, minimal roof line, nothing peaked at all, would that be below, at, or above 25 feet?
We could make it fit below 25 feet if we did a flat roof all the way across.
So the conclusion I draw from that is the peak design now occupies more or less 5 feet?
That's correct.
Okay. Because I looking at it, it was very difficult for me to tell from the designs that I had, but I didn't come to that conclusion. So I need to see some sort of documentation in terms of measurements. And the other question is, and I think I have the answer. The applicant really hasn't prepared any kind of a plan as to how to accommodate the estimated needed parking spaces. Clearly, 35 or 30 isn't enough, but I gather that you feel that it's not your response, and I don't mean to malign you, but I gather you feel at this point it's not your responsibility to sort of figure out if, in fact, there is a solution as to where we can put these additional cars. Is that correct?
Well, I don't think your premise is correct. I don't think that the assumption that there's going to be more than 35 cars is a correct assumption. I think that the Housing Authority has a track record of these types of projects and have a very good knowledge of what the typical cars and the number of residents that the cars that they have. And based on that, we just did one in San Luis Obispo that had quite a few less than one-to-one, and it does not have any cars parking off-site. It's human nature to basically think that other people live the same way you do. And I think that when you're living in a single-family house or a condo, like the resident said, they have people with 3 and 4 cars and 2 drivers. And they feel that because that's how they live, that's how their neighbors live. I do exactly the same thing. I mean, it's human nature. You just assume that everyone else approaches things the same way you do. That's not the case with the residents that are going to be occupying these units typically. And I think that that's exactly why the state has mandated the parking ratios that they did and mandated that the parking exceptions that are requested for that are granted, because I think that more often than not, people assume that other people are going to be using the same, using the cars the same way they do. And it's ironic too, is that I hear arguments that there's too much traffic, there's too many cars, there's not enough, you know, this. But at the same time, we want more parking, which is going to accommodate more cars. If we limit the number of, you know, if we're near transit stops, we're near, I mean, it's only a mile walk to downtown. It's not a far walk. There's bus stops that there's right near there. There's bike parking on site. There's alternative means of travel. And I believe strongly that the residents that occupy this space, the parking we're providing is adequate.
Well, actually, I find your answer, you know, somewhat assuring. But what is the, from your office or another office that has responsibility, what is the projection, the notion of how many cars might participate in this?
We feel strongly that the one-to-one ratio is adequate.
So I understand. So the thought is that when this is fully rented, there will be a total of 35 cars associated with the residents of those 35 apartments. Is that correct?
That's my assumption, yes, or fewer. However, it's important to point out that that is not a criteria by which this project can be judged at a city level. And I really don't want to throw that out there because that's not what I'm here for. We really do want to be a good neighbor, but I do think it's important to understand what the rules are.
Right. But whether that finding is realistic or not will certainly influence our decisions as what the appropriate density is.
Correct. And the project that I'm referencing in San Luis Obispo, if anyone's interested, is 860 on the Y, which is managed by the Housing Authority. It's on Humbert Street. And I believe there are 20 units between the two, 18 units in that one building. And I think there's 12 or 13 parking spaces. And more often than not, they're vacant.
Else, Joseph?
No.
Jesse?
Just one question. So given that this is a conceptual review and 35 units are requested for conceptual purposes, at what point does this project not become viable for the applicant any longer unit-wise? If the density bonus wasn't able to be granted for one reason or another, at what point would the project no longer be something that they're considering?
It'd be 35 units.
35 units or nothing. So.
Yeah, I know there was an implication made that architects tend to shoot for the moon, thinking their project's going to be shot down. I can assure you that with affordable housing projects, that's not the case. What we're presenting is exactly what is viable and what we're intending to proceed with.
Right, so if I'm hearing you correctly, so 30 units, and unfortunately the project just doesn't go forward because it's no longer economically viable.
Well, I don't think that there would have to be objective criteria to reduce the density below the 35, and I think that it would be difficult to demonstrate from the city's part that the 35 units that are requested would not meet some objective criteria. It's subjective criteria is exactly what the state density bonus law is wiping off the slate. So I think it would be very difficult to demonstrate anything less than 35 is viable on the site.
Okay.
Susan?
I wondered if you had elevators.
Currently we do not.
Okay. And would that be hard to add in?
No, it's possible to add in. It's a client-driven, option.
Seems like that potentially could help make it more accessible. Obviously, you can use ground floor apartments for those who need that, but might
correct.
Open it up, make it a little easier for people with young children who might be on the upper floors.
Certainly something we can consider.
And then in your plans, is there any look at things like paving Rockview, any street improvements directly around the project?
Yes. Okay. Yes, to Rockview, Atascadero Road, and Sunset.
Okay. I think that's all I have in terms of questions.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, I guess I'm very concerned with the information we were sent by Ms. Dutton, and I would just hope that in doing your due diligence,
you know, you raise the level of concern to the quality that's in typical environmental impact statements, because it's going to be challenged, I think. The question that I would have is was there any discussion with the city about any of the closures of the surrounding roads? Atascadero Road.
To close the street?
Fronting Road. No, to close it.
No.
And did you... I think it would be helpful, it would be helpful to see for people who are concerned about cars where the bus stops and things are, mm-hmm. How far it is to the schools and things like that.
That's a great example. Yeah, we can definitely put an exhibit together documenting that.
And I guess the only other thing is, did you look at, you talked about not excavating the top northeast corner. Did you look at moving some of the amenity spaces there away from the prime corner, which has some of the best views and things like that?
Which corner? I'm not positive.
Let
me get back to a second.
The northeast corner where you said you chose not to excavate, mm-hmm. where you have the lower floor is not enclosed there at all. Did you look at moving some of the amenity spaces back there to get to displace volume or add volume?
No, we felt the amenity space worked best on the ground floor at the point of entry when you come into the project, so that it's a common entrance point here at the corner here. What we're talking about is this building doesn't have a ground floor, and this one doesn't have a ground floor because that's where the slope is. So it basically steps up at this point so that we don't have to excavate the dirt underneath that portion of the building. And I will say a couple things that we did with the parking lot down here is we created this one entrance, which we obviously have to tie in here, but we did slope it slightly up to raise the grade so that we're not excavating down, we're building on top of the soil, and that allowed us to kind of keep a lot of the excavation away, as well as what we're doing up in the top corner that we talked about.
Okay. The rest of my things will be comments.
Okay. Speaking about the parking and the parking lot, you have a retention basin there on the east side, the southeast corner there. Had you looked at doing an exit point from that parking lot and putting that retention basin subgrade, and then maybe tilting your parking to a more, rather than a 90-degree angle, maybe a 45-degree angle, so that you could get more parking spaces in that area?
We have, for sure. The subgrade terrain, subterranean is going to require more excavating, which is something that we are trying to avoid. And then the other thing is, by having a connection down here, which is what I think you're referring to,
yes,
that ties the elevation of the parking lot to this elevation here, which would require bringing it down. Oh. By not having that connection, it allowed us to raise the grade a little bit higher.
Okay, it was hard for me to see what the elevations were.
Sure. Understood.
Were there with what you had. Also, then, as far as moving forward on the parking and future-proofing this, seeing as we're talking about 55-year deed leases and stuff, what are your thoughts about installing EV bollards, or at least having the utilities in the parking area so that you can have EV, especially like phase, level two charging. Mm-hmm. There's, especially for a low cost housing unit, you'd probably be able to get that granted in on those.
100% support it.
Okay. How many spaces do you think you would install?
I'd have to talk to ownership and see, but I haven't had that discussion, but I do know that we will not just have the infrastructure in, but we will be installing the EV chargers.
And then have you looked into another grant program as far as parking structure PV systems, so you could offset some of your electrical use on this and then help bring the monthly cost down for your clients?
Well, one thing I didn't mention because we were talking about it earlier is that Project 860 on the Y, which I mentioned, is a net zero project, and this one is intended to be the same. So we will have on-site generation, and we will have an all-electric usage on-site, And what allows us to do that, which is a little bit more unique than a standard apartment project, is that because it's a low-income subsidized project, the residents don't pay their own electric bills. No. So it allows it to be subsidized by a single system on the roof, which makes it much more efficient than a standard apartment. So, and there's numerous green elements that we build into this. One is just because it's the right thing to do. And secondly is because it also affords you a higher score when you're applying for tax credits. So as far as the green building components of this, we're going to take advantage of every opportunity we have to incorporate those into this project. So it really will be an example that people can look to for green building.
Are you considering geothermal heat pumps and...
that would be excavating again.
Pardon?
That would be excavating.
Except for well. Yeah. You know, you could do it in a wellhead.
Yeah.
So you're talking about 6 inches.
We can certainly look into it. We didn't just based on the idea of it being, we're trying to minimize the soil disturbance. But if it's something that we can work out with the archaeologist and it works out to be good, we can certainly consider it.
Yeah, because you're talking about, once again, 50-year life cycles and stuff. So I know it's a higher initial cost, but that would go far towards your LEED rating and your net zero capability.
Absolutely. And then that's another thing to point out, too, about these types of projects that we do for the Housing Authority is that their funding is a little bit different than a normal HOA or a normal apartment building where they put money away each month to carry on maintenance and so forth. There is a budget built in for maintenance, but there's not for major renovations or updates. So what they have to do is they go through a life cycle, and then they do renovations, and they do a full renovation. So the criteria at the very beginning is we try to build in longevity. We're not going to try and do things and cut corners at the beginning. We're going to try to build as high quality, low maintenance, durable building as we can so that it can withstand that period of time until the next funding cycle comes to do another renovation.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of geothermal heat, both for water heating and also space heating. Okay, did you have a view shed schematic from the homes on above there to the north to see where their deck height is comparative to your roof height of your buildings?
We've done that internally, but I haven't put it in the set yet. We're quite a bit lower than those houses. If you remember from the images at the beginning.
Right.
They are elevated. I mean, Rockview's elevated. And then you can see they're elevated even above Rockview quite a bit. So we're quite a bit below those decks there. But we can absolutely cut a site section through there and demonstrate that.
That would be helpful. Because you also have, excuse me, a lot of their primary views are to the bay to the south.
Of course.
So if you can show that you're... roof line is going to be your ridge line is going to be below their sight line, then that's going to help to convince me that that the 30 foot instead of the 25 foot would be more appropriate.
Okay. And I do really want to stress that we do want to be good neighbors. This is a long-term project, so.
Okay, and then also just you mentioned garden site. That was one of the things I had, a community garden area for the residents. I didn't see that on the site plan.
I don't think I mentioned that, but
no, you said something
in the staff report. I said garden area, but I meant the English version of a garden, which is just plants.
Okay. So is there an area there that could be a community garden for the residents?
I mean, this area down here would be the most logical spot because it's available there. We can maybe do some raised planter beds, so once again, we're not excavating.
Yeah. Okay, I think that would be a good inclusion. And then once again, I was worried about the elevator too. Seems like young families with pushing two strollers and a papoose, okay, I think that. And then also, what is the qualifications or what is the process that you use for selecting the occupants?
I think that's a better question for the Housing Authority to answer.
Great. So before you leave, Tom, any other questions for Michael?
Yeah, I appreciate the work that you've done on the thing. Did you look at the possibility of stacking two-story units over top of one-story units to get rid of all the exterior circulation and things that you've got to have on some of these?
We did look at two-story units. Unfortunately, the number of units just went down so drastically. And our goal here is really to provide as much affordable housing as we can because these opportunities come along so infrequently. If we were to not provide as many as we could here, it would be really a lost opportunity for the community and for the residents that need the housing.
And you didn't look at any studio-type units?
We have done studios on other projects. It's just that this particular project was targeting 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms.
Okay. And then, I'm sorry, Tom, but we had a comment about the massing on that, especially on that southwest corner.
Mm-hmm.
You say that it's 35 isn't volatile on the number, but you know, if you could cut the massing down by removing that one unit on the southwest corner and then allowing the articulation to build up on the unit, have you considered that?
We have not considered removing the unit. We could potentially lower the massing. I mean, we don't have to have that as a tower element.
Okay.
And just to clarify, I'm kind of opening myself up to criticism here, but those types of comments, you know, like massing, window configuration, those types of things, 100% discretionary. That doesn't affect the density. It doesn't affect the viability of the project. Those are the type of discussions that we can absolutely have. And if the comments came back and said the tower element doesn't look appropriate and you wanted to bring that down, we could absolutely do that. However, losing a unit is something that would be difficult to have a discussion about.
You know, for me, you know, this is a comment, but this, you know, also ties into a question. Softening those two front corners would help.
Mm-hmm.
Build, you know, articulate up into the on the massing of the project.
Okay.
Okay. Then we could have the
Okay. Question was related to how do we fill it up?
What are the criteria for selecting the occupants?
So the criteria is the main criteria is income. You can't make too much. And then you have to make enough money to be able to afford the rent, right? So there's sort of that internal underwriting of the person. But that income is documented. We have to get third-party documentation of that, whether, you know, if it's a person on a fixed income like Social Security, we have to get documentation from Social Security. If it's employment income, we have to get the documentation from the employer. And then that occurs every single year. And then the lease requires them, if there's any change in income, that they report that to us. If that occurs mid-year, that gets reported to us. And that documentation gets collected as well. So, and then probably 4 months before a property is completed, at least 4 months, we'll start outreach. Depending what community the housing is located in, we always focus on that's the priority. Preferences are for the people that live or work in that community. We work with local organizations, advertising, and so on. Does that get to what you're
kind of? You know, mostly I was looking for how, if there was a scoring system or something that would allow for preferences for local, people here.
Local for sure. There absolutely is. And then we don't overhouse people, so we won't put a one person household into a three person apartment, that kind of a thing.
What are you thinking, or what are you presuming that the rents are going to be?
Well, they're probably going to range anywhere from $500 to $1,000 a month, depending on the type of apartment it is. And the rents are set by the state, depending on the apartment type, and then they actually do what they call map the apartments. So there's so many one-bedroom apartments set aside for low income, so many set aside for very low income. And so depending on how that apartment is designated, the same apartment could have a slightly lower rent than the one next to it, just depending on on that kind of designation.
And then how about your funding? Where is your funding coming from?
So the way this property, the way all this affordable rental housing gets built nowadays is through the tax code. It's almost the lion's share comes from private investors who we sell the tax benefits to. And that's why we stay involved, and we would retain ownership as a nonprofit of the underlying land. The investors who purchase the tax benefits, they have to, we form a limited partnership, and so they'll own the improvements as a limited partner, and we'll stay on as the managing general partner. But we control that land, underlying land, forever, so it can never convert to any other kind of use. So there is a 55-year deed restriction, but we're thinking we're in there for the permanency of it. So after 55 years, we're just going to renew it for another 55 years.
Okay. Joseph, you had a question?
I'm wondering if you can shed some light on what seems to be the key issue here, which is sort of the financial viability predicated on 35 units, which frankly, I'm more than a little in the dark about, because it's not a typical done-for-profit commercial development. So whatever you can tell me to help me understand what makes it viable and when it becomes unviable, and I suppose we're getting into
a lot of the cost. I mean, it's not. In some ways, it's not. In some ways, it's much more complex and difficult. In fact, in most ways, it's more complex and difficult than a market rate development, because you've just got a lot of other. We're dealing with everything they deal with, but times three in terms of complexity. So. We have the same kind of costs, and some of the costs in development are fixed costs. You know, our architecture, our third-party consultant costs, the land costs, those are pretty much fixed. And so you've got to divide those costs. It only becomes viable at the point you get a certain unit count, a yield on that site, your off-site improvement costs. All that stuff is the same. So that's and then you've got just your operational aspects. This site will have a live-on-site resident manager. Just to be able to pay for that person, it takes a certain economy of scale. So that's where that's coming from. From our perspective also, there's an overwhelming need for the housing in this community. Just to put it in context a little bit, you really don't have very many sites, and the ones you have are tiny, so there's not much that's going to happen there. And you have goals that you've adopted. You had a 5-year goal in your last housing element from 2014 to 2019. So we're done with that period essentially now, of producing 90 new low and moderate income housing units, and you didn't even get a fourth of that accomplished. I think you got 23. Low and mods accomplished during that planning period. So you're already in a hole by 70 low and moderate. And this new planning period starts 2020 to 2028. That's going to be in your housing element. You've got a goal of 227 low and moderate income units on top of the 70 that you didn't create before. So, I mean, you have to look at the people that aren't here tonight that need the housing and that are suffering. And so, and also in the context of making some reasonable progress towards the goal. On the parking thing, I just wanted to mention that there are jurisdictions that actually have adopted a one space per affordable unit as their parking standard. And the one that comes to mind is the city of San Luis Obispo has had that in place for probably 10 years. And they probably produce more affordable housing than any community. And so I'd encourage the staff to talk to the city manager or planning director about how that's gone. But from our point of view, there are no issues with it, and because they've kept it in place, it continues to be their standard. And I agree with what Tom said, that it's very expensive, as we all know, to own and maintain a car. So a lot of our, on these three-bedroom units, what you're going to see probably in the majority of those cases are going to be single-parent households. It's going to be a mom who's got a couple of kids. She can barely afford one car. She's making maybe $30,000 a year. You know, you look at the cost of maintaining it, a car payment, the insurances. So one-to-one has worked out for us. That's all I can say. We do want to be good neighbors. We absolutely do. So We're open to ideas. We're really open to any kind of, and we're not done thinking about these things, but sort of a transportation management program. If we could get a zip car and put it on the site and people use it, let's get it done. Any kinds of things. At the Veterans Project that Tom mentioned that we did, we created a bicycle storage locker, and we literally bought everybody at the development a brand new bicycle, and they use them all the time. They use them, and these are all vets. So anyway, that's probably enough from me for now. But
okay, anybody else? Any other questions, Michael?
Yeah, I would appreciate if you could talk about the screening. How do you keep the three bedroom from being three sisters?
Oh well, first of all, we have a live on site manager. You have to be careful in fair housing issues about what's determined a household. So if three sisters come in and say we are a household, we've lived together for 30 years, there's some legal protections around that. But there's no way that people can't sneak in extra people who don't belong there. We have to document. We know exactly what's going on, who's living there, and so I'm not sure what your question is exactly, but
it's more aimed at the idea of the cars again, because it's almost impossible to have a car and a job, or a job without a car. I mean, I understand that there could be local jobs, and hopefully there would be places for people to work that they could walk. And of course, if there's children, they can walk to the schools, which I think is a great thing. But what concerns me is, small footnote, my biggest project ever worked on was 600 units of housing in Baltimore for the city. And when we did a study of who was in the housing that had been built, 30 years earlier, we found that they were all non-traditional families, and they had far more people in the units than anybody had ever anticipated being in those units. And so it was multiple adults with multiple sets of children. And so my concern isn't the children. My concern is the 35 cars. I think it's very easy to say in San Luis there would be ample potential income jobs for people. I don't know what the average income is of the people who work in supporting the tourist industry here and the hotels and things like that. But
it's minimum wage. I can tell you it's minimum wage.
Yeah,
plus tips if you're lucky. Yeah,
I don't know if they meet your income criteria.
But yeah, they do. They do.
Yeah, I would. That's my biggest concern is the believability of that. I'm very aware. Some of us went to a thing a few years ago where the state was talking about what's coming down in terms of their control over housing. And I totally understand what you're saying about we don't have control over some of those things here. But that's my concern. We've got so many areas here where, the streets are overparked. When you hear the neighborhood talking about that, it's true. A couple streets up on one called Avalon, it's just a parking lot. My question was about the screening. You can't control how many cars are in there in the screening process by saying you're allotted one car. There's not a one-to-one lot. That's Unit A's.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we could or not. I mean, it's something we could look at. I'm not sure. Okay. I don't know. Yeah, certainly something that we could look at. We do have control of who lives in the apartments, whether we can say, you can't, or we have a priority, you can only have one car. I don't know. What we found in a lot of neighborhoods also, where we've heard that they have parking issues already, is that and I think a lot of people realize this is true, people don't use their garages frequently. They don't use them for cars. They're used for storage. So, and they end up parking, a car in the driveway or two in the driveway and one on the street or something. So, a lot of times that contributes towards, because where's all this parking coming from, right? So, where's all the on-street parking coming from? But,
okay. Any further questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Questions, comments?
One question for staff.
I was led to believe during that discussion that the density bonus is non-discretionary. Is that true or false?
So we do have the density bonus requirements are written into our code, and it does mandate that we provide them. The only question comes into play when you're doing the over 35% and what goes along with that. It just says you can do it, and it doesn't say anything else, you know, along with it. You know, I think the architect spoke to this, Tom Jess, in that, you know, when you're going up to the 35, you have a mandated certain amount of at a certain level of affordable housing units in the project. This entire project is affordable. So I think that in and of itself qualifies it to have a density bonus that exceeds 35%. So I think that's kind of where you would come in at it. That's kind of the argument I think they're making, and I would tend to agree with them, you know, based on how the state rules are written. And it just, there's not any parameters that go along with the above 35%. And it actually is something that we're in the process of updating the housing element now that we're going to be looking at coming up with some criteria so you don't have to ask that question in the future.
Yeah. Scott, would it be allowable for us to condition the project that they only allow one car per unit?
We're required to, I mean, they can ask for concessions, and we're required to grant them related to the parking. So I'm not sure about that. I've seen projects that limit, I mean, there's some in Santa Barbara where housing projects where they've limited the ability to have cars, period. And there's some down in Southern California as well. I'm not sure whether those were affordable housing projects or not, or how that went. I'm not really sure, you know, what type of projects those were. I've heard of them, and it's been a while since I've read up on them, so my memory sort of fails me a little bit there. I have to do research on them.
To me, that seemed very simple. I mean, 35 units, 35 parking spots, assigned parking. I mean, really, you're assigned a unit four, you have unit four parking spot. I mean,
it's an interesting concept, and one we're happy to talk to the applicant about and you know, kind of do a little more research into. I mean, you're all looking at me intently, so happy to run that down a little bit, you know, given the stairs. So, we can look at what that does and what impacts that might have. I mean, sometimes there's unintended consequences. We want to look at those as well. So, but I'm happy to take a look at it.
Yeah, and the zip car idea, I think, was good shared car. Could we go ahead and put the slide up that had the items that you wanted us to specifically comment on? And then I think we'll kind of go by the down the board here and see what people have to say. Seems we're not going to have a resolution. We're not going to have a motion. There was a slide that had, concerns. Yeah. And just as a reminder for each of us.
Previous presentation, right?
For those of us who have limited memory.
I'd kind of like to open up maybe with a comment about the parking. I feel like this...
Well, why don't you take first shot at it?
First shot. I feel like... this is about people. It's not about cars. And I've been that low-income mom with two kids and, you know, able to afford a car. I think Californians have a love affair with their cars, and some of it is because of our space. We have a lot of space to travel in between. I don't think we do a good job with public transportation overall. I will say I have... a son and daughter-in-law who are living in Brooklyn and have one car between them, but there's a lot of public transportation. I have a daughter who's in Evanston, Illinois, and she and her boyfriend have no cars. Again, they walk, public transportation. I would say a lot of the folks who are going to be using this facility or hopefully being able to rent it are going to be those folks who are working in our tourism industries and making minimum wage and are going to be able to walk to that hotel or that restaurant where they're serving, or even the grocery stores they're working in, or they're working at the dollar store. So I think those options are going to be there. I have a mother who lives in Pennsylvania in a senior housing development. She's 91 years old. They have cars that park on the outside, on the edge of the property, and she's 91, and she's walking in with her walker through ice and snow and sleet and everything. They do have covered walkways, but it's easily a good, you know, block, I'd say, or more, to where her little house is. And other folks have a longer way to walk, and it keeps them healthy. So I think there are some, I get the concerns with the density and the traffic and the challenges with that. I have a feeling as we move forward and we have looked at that intersection in terms of whether we put in a roundabout, you know, is that going to help solve some problems? Are some of the developments and improvements they're going to make even help with, like, Rockview being partially unpaved and the challenges there? I understand the concerns with the height and with the scale of the building, but, gosh, 35 families or individuals could have a place to live that they could afford in this town, serving the community in the kinds of industries that a lot of those folks maybe are commuting from Santa Maria to be here. So it's a trade-off in my mind. But I hate to see us focus on the car thing so much. It's human beings. It's people's lives. So that's just a start to that conversation,
okay,
my opinion.
Okay, so how did you feel about the exterior design, the material selections?
I felt like they made a pretty sensitive set of choices in terms of colors, in terms of materials, trying to mix it up a little bit so it wasn't just one kind of monotonous kind of stucco box. They did some articulation. I don't know all the architectural terms. Michael can cover that. In terms of, you know, not having a flat facade, having different geometric shapes to it. I like all the windows, the big windows, I think is great. It's going to be a lot of light. I love having the courtyard, safe play space for kids, nice sitting space. I think that's a great idea. I could see with the tower issues, you know, maybe trying to reduce that a little bit. I know it's a big different project for Morro Bay, but in some ways, so were those condos on, or townhomes, whatever they are, on Rockview when they first went in. That was kind of shocking. But I could see this as being a much more attractive entrance to the town than what's there now, which is a lot of empty lots and not very well landscaped mobile home parks and things. So I see it as potentially being a real asset in a lot of ways.
Good. Fees or waivers?
Oh, it makes sense with what they're doing. It's 100% affordable housing. And I know he didn't really address income levels, but I know there are standards with what those are. And it's, you know, they take medium income and it's a percentage, you know, below and below and below with the low and very low and very, very low income. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to state?
Setback, height, parking, density. No, I think that covers it.
Just.
Yeah, I'll just jump right in. So first of all, I'm excited about the project. I'm excited that we're getting affordable housing. I'm excited that we're getting housing, period. I'm excited. So. I don't think the density, I don't think the density is problematic. I don't know that we have a lot of discretion there anyway. But I don't think it's extremely problematic. And I'm not on a scale of 1 to 10 on parking. I am a 2. I think it's an issue. I think it's an issue that Haslow probably has dealt with in the past, and definitely can address through their procedures. And just quite frankly, if anybody's kind of driven down there on weekends, it's full of cars already. So, I mean, I don't think this is going to make it problematically worse. So, like I say, I'm not concerned about parking, or to say I am not very concerned about parking. Two out of 10 on that. The height. I am concerned about the archaeological. I am concerned about the height. I am concerned that there's going to need the possibility of increasing average natural grade to accommodate some of the archaeological aspects of this project, thereby raising the total overall height becoming an issue. I think that's completely within the architect's skill set to mitigate. I think they're completely capable of mitigating that and accomplishing what we need to accomplish there. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to say I'm about a 4 on height. Setback on Rockview, I'm a 1. I'm not very concerned about that. The exterior design, I think that's a little premature. I mean, I know they do a good job. I've seen their work. I'm sure they will give us a good-looking building at the end of this, because we will make sure they do. fee deferrals or waivers. So this is a big project. Staff's going to spend a lot of time on this. You know, I'm all for deferring fees and waiving fees when it's appropriate. And obviously, City Council is going to have the final say on that anyway. However, and just kind of speaking my mind on this, staff's going to spend a lot of time on this, and I don't want to burden our citizens with I don't want to say a decrease in services, but I mean the planning staff's going to be busy doing this for a long time. They're going to be very busy doing these types of things, doing these inspections, doing these the fire folks are going to be doing this. So I mean, to say waiving some fees is appropriate, of course, in a nonprofit type situation, I'm amenable to that, to recommending that to the City Council. However, obviously we would want to make sure we're in some sort of a cost recovery mode there. We're not just,
Well, definitely for that. I mean, we didn't talk much about that, and I apologize on that front. I mean, it is something that really the council is going to be dealing with, but we'll bring what the package of requests are for you and give you an explanation of what that is, because from the applicant standpoint, it's really more like fee deferrals. They like to take them. It's like a form of a loan, because it gets them a better ranking for tax credits if the city does that. So we sort of roll it into something like that, so the city would eventually get paid.
Good.
They don't really want to. They don't get anything if we waive fees, but they do get sort of credit, the tax credit process, as far as ranking and that type of thing, if we turn them into sort of deferrals or loans, essentially. So, and we'll have an explanation to that for the Planning Commission when we come back with the actual project. Probably kind of interesting to see kind of what they're looking at having us do, and then that can be part of maybe the recommendation for the Planning Commission to make to City Council. So,
ideal. So, great project. Let's do it.
Okay, Joseph.
Anybody who's listened to me ramble on at times about affordable housing here in Morro Bay knows that I'm a big proponent of affordable housing, and I've often called, cars and parking a blight on the environment. So, I do believe that every community has to do its fair share, its burden to produce affordable housing. You simply can't rely on your neighboring community where real estate values may be less to take up the slack, because you don't want to do it in your community. But there is a certain irony here. So let's see. With respect to density and setbacks and the exterior design, which I think is more than adequate and reasonable, fee deferrals, all that is certainly fine in encouraging affordable housing. But then you come to the two difficult things, parking and height. I was pleased to hear that in San Luis Obispo they've experienced a kind of 1-to-1 ratio. I take that as encouraging. The idea of somehow restricting rentals to people to families or units that only have one car, it strikes me as very difficult to enforce and would probably encourage deception. I'm wondering if there could be some kind of a requirement that the people who rent these apartments are have employment in Morro Bay or within a reasonable radius of Morro Bay, so that practically there could be a way for them to bicycle or, I'm not sure, walk and not really need to have a car, because as was pointed out, the difference between Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo is there's numerous additional employment opportunities in San Luis Obispo and a great commuter system, and we don't have that here. So if these people rent these apartments and live elsewhere, they're going to need cars. And I hate to settle for a solution where we just basically just throw up our hands and say, well, it's going to be what it is, and we hope it's not going to be too bad, but we don't really know. With respect to height, that's held so near and dear by everybody in Morro Bay, and it's so closely identified with urbanization of an area and what we want to avoid here in Morro Bay, which is why I focused on that, you know, the one explicit exception to the 25-foot limitation being 30 feet in the event of a more attractive roof. But and I will defer until, you know, I see the actual plans to ensure that that additional height, which we would really have to grant in the interest of a more attractive roof line, is utilized only for that and not for an attractive roof line plus 1 or 2 feet of additional headroom space on a third floor. That's critical to me. I also look closely at the other city ordinance, which was a more general ordinance, which basically said that certain exceptions could be granted, and that particular provision made no mention of height. And the applicant, from my understanding, is interpreting that as that more general provision would also give the city discretion to extend it beyond 25 to 30 feet. That doesn't seem credible to me, meaning given the heightened interest in the height limitation in general in the community, certainly when that ordinance was passed and certainly now, and given the explicit nature of that 30-foot extension limit with respect to a roof design, it really stretches credibility that in this provision they would mention numerous examples of where development exceptions could be made, and they wouldn't bother including a height exception. I think the only fair way to read that more general provision is that that was not meant to encompass a height extension. So I would hope, and I'd insist, I'd require that this project in some fashion either maintain the 25-foot height limitation or the 30-foot limitation given a more attractive roof design. And the reason I asked about the issue of our of Native Americans and the relics in the ground, that's also driving this issue. I mean, there could be other approaches which would be more acceptable to people in the community if they could, you know, do some subterranean excavations and lower the height and perhaps even create some additional parking. This project strikes me as really worthwhile in principle, in general, but specifically, it just looks like a bridge too far. It's too few parking spaces, it's too many units, and it's too tall. I have to question, why this particular site was selected. I mean, we know the dirt in Morro Bay is expensive, and this has the additional liability of having probably or possibly significant relics. And then it has, you know, again, sort of a lack of peripheral parking resources, and it strikes me as, you know, I don't know what other properties are available in the inventory, but this property, you know, strikes me as one is perhaps not well suited for 35 units. those are my thoughts.
Good. Michael?
Yeah, I appreciate what Haslow's doing. I can't think of too many times I've seen this many low-income units in one place, and I think we should do everything possible to help them along. I'm not concerned about the density. I think the future we're going to see density here, whether we like it or not. The parking concerns me a tremendous amount because there is no place to go. We've run out of places to park. I'd be totally in favor of restricting the ownership or the rental to one parking space, if there's a way to do that that's legal. I don't see the development of, maybe this is a question for staff, I don't see any development of on-street parking anywhere around here. I assume Rockview is too narrow, but Atascadero Road has no capacity to develop parallel parking.
No, I mean, the Atascadero Road and the frontage that's there is Caltrans.
Ah.
Yeah. So we don't have any ability to do anything with that. In fact, they have to, you know, talk to Caltrans about what the expected frontage improvements are along the Atascadero frontage road that's there, because that entire area is just there and maintained under the authority of Caltrans for future widening. That's why it's there. So,
yeah, the height concerns me because we didn't see studies about height. I don't like the idea that people would be disenfranchised if we're raising the height or giving that as a piece tying into the exterior design. I don't like the exterior design. I'm not a traditionalist. I don't like sloped roofs. I think the sloped roof in this case has a continuous ridge that you can see on the Atascadero Road side, which from the upper side means you're going to have a continuous line across there, whether you've got pediments in front of it or not. Pediments cost money. Ridge costs money. I'd be perfectly happy seeing something more contemporary that reduces the roof height of the building. The setback on Rockview, I think, is problematic. It sounds to me, from what I read in the correspondence from Ms. Dutton and what's been disclosed here, that there's significant issues there. They're going to have to be dealt with in, with the highest degree of sensitivity to our indigenous populations and cultural resources. And I'm assuming that it's out of play to move anything forward. Like I said, the exterior design to me is very old-fashioned. I don't think it looks like Morro Bay because we've seen really good projects that got approved here that are much more contemporary designs. You know, the pair of duplexes on North Main, the pieces on Sunset farther up the street, I think are all things that have a fresher look. I totally agree with Commissioner Luhr's comments for something that's going to be, you know, I don't think it's passive house quality, but if it's going to be net zero, you know, we have to see more concern for the cost affordability for the residents that are going to be in there with some potential upgrades there in terms of infrastructure. So to me, I'd say I don't understand the 35 the way they're spread out. You know, to me, the challenge is to find any place to live, and the larger units are maybe harder for me to rationalize, but I'm not going to chime in on trying to add anything to that. It strikes me that if you want to get density, you try to get affordable units that are in the studio size, but that's maybe a different project. I don't know what we're being asked to defer.
And that's why I apologized earlier. Yeah, we didn't really bring that forward to you about it. I mean, it's something we're going to be talking with them about, and again, we'll bring back a package as part of the discretionary, you know, for the Planning Commission to make a recommendation on and a better explanation of than what I provided to you.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about when we waive fees and things like that. This is a development project, so I would be very cautious about waiving anything, but deferral, I think, could be something interesting. I just appreciate that the you know, neighbors are concerned about how dense this is. I don't think Route 41 is going to look like it does now in 20 years. We saw it get my streets wrong. The earlier turnoff of 41, is that Ironwood? On Ironwood, we have a whole series of three-story condominiums there. And I think that was done with reasonable sensitivity. It's a lot of parking there in front of them, but I think we'll see that corridor get density. I think it's one of the few places we have that we're allowing density. We can't downzone places from our multifamily. We have very few sites in town that have this kind of scale to put forward. And quite frankly, if you told me, what about private development versus low income, I'd say I'd go to low income every time for developing this property. So I want to help them as best we can, but I think it would be more interesting if it was a little more contemporary, kept the height down, and had some parking restriction in the leasing.
Okay. Well, it's there's a lot of good comments so far. I'll run through my list. As far as the density, I don't have a problem with the density. I think we have an opportunity to create habitable slots in this town. I would like to see some kind of a scoring system that would give preference either to for workforce housing that's localized, because so that we keep the benefits local, you know. But I know there's going to be retirees and stuff that are going to be on fixed incomes that would also fit into this category. So, you know, if we can see a scoring system, if it is legal, and that's my big concern with fair housing, that we can have as many of the residents come from that are come from this area or work in this area. The parking, we're going to be, you know, the state's going to be eliminating most of our parking requirements coming up. They've already worked on one bill this last week, signed one bill that is going to increase density in residential neighborhoods. The height, I'm really concerned about. We don't protect private views here, but I am concerned about them. So I would like to see a portrayal of how this is going to stack up to the neighbors and where the ridgeline is going to lie in the view shed of the neighbors, the adjacent neighbors. The plate line, that from what I can read from these elevations, would be below the 25, would be in the 25-foot height. And the roof, it looks like the roof line would extend above that. So I'm kind of nihilistic on that point. So I would mostly be concerned about where this fits in with the view shed, on the view shed, and that would be my determinant on that. Setbacks from Rock View, I really don't have a problem with it, but I think it's all going to be handled. I guess there's going to be some archaeological considerations, and I'm sure there's going to be one or two studies about that. So, and there's going to be people monitoring that throughout the project. I like the articulation for the exterior design. I like the articulation. I like the courtyard design. I think that gives a sense of community. I would like to. I can go contemporary, I can go traditionalist, and I think it just needs to be well handled. I like the large windows and the open spacing and the kind of the negative space that you get from the large windows. So my comments about the massing on the corners, you know, the windows kind of minimize that, but I think the overall massing, I would like to see that reduced, so that you build up into the project rather than have a statement on the corners on that, just to bring it back down to a little more human scale, because we're not in Orange County on that. I like the placement of the parking lot. I know that was also for archaeological reasons. There's probably more artifacts on the lower section of that property than on the upper section of the property, because that's already been excavated. So placing the parking lot lower allows you to overfill rather than to undercut. I'm presuming that. I don't have any knowledge on that. But I would like to see much more brought forward on the net zero and the green building performance, because once again, if we're looking at a 55-year lifespan, you're going to have ROI on most of these investments in 3 to 5 to 7 years, and so that's going to reduce the cost of ownership for the entity for the remaining time period of that 55 years. And most of those systems are long lasting and will reduce the CO2 emissions and the methane emissions would get from gas, you know, gas appliances and stuff. So the further you can get to net zero, the further you can get to LEED's goal. I'm not a real fan of LEED's because I think the manufacturers kind of have overtaken that, but a net zero consideration is critical. So the more methods you use to that would convince me more to allow other to give you other benefits, and I think it'd be better, more benefit for the community. And you know, being innovative on the parking and the transportation side of this, I think would be really helpful. A restriction of, if we can restrict, you know, one car per unit per residence, you know, having something like, you know, shared, you know, bike sharing, you know, electric mobility, bike share, e-mobility, you know, have shared scooters or rentable scooters there, because, you know, this town can be accessed by somebody who's fairly active. If you can walk, you can, you know, you could ride an e-bike throughout this whole town to get back and forth to work or whatever. So having more locations where, you know, where that would be available, and also a shared car, I think would be, you know, a zip car or something like that, I think would be helpful. You know, the community garden, I like, you know, I brought that up. I like that idea. I think it also engenders a sense of community. I think you've handled a lot of the you know, shared space of the of the security from coming from people knowing their neighbors in this design. I think that's really, really important. The worst thing you can do is a single loaded corridor, you know, where nobody knows their neighbors, you know, and something like this. So having the courtyard, having the viewing area, you know, where the views are in that southwest corner, I really liked, you know, like that. Having a barbecue area in the courtyard, having a play area in the courtyard where the neighbors could, you know, look out their kitchen window and watch their kids playing and watch the neighbors' kids playing, I think is really helpful. So, you know, that was really, you know, developed on what they term defensible space. So the more of those elements we can get into this, the more important, the better I think it is. And I think you've incorporated quite a few. An elevator, I think, is critical. So I know it's a cost, but I think it'd also be critical for young families and also somebody who just happens to break their foot and trying to get to that third floor carrying groceries. And the other thing too is I think if you can outreach into the neighborhood and try to get a dialogue going with the neighbors and work with their fears and their concerns, that would go a long ways towards getting the approval from this commission and from the city, because we're their representatives too. So so the more outreach and the more communication you can have with them, and the responsiveness to them, I think, is really important. Okay, I think that's it, Scott. Is there anything else you want from us on this? Did
we're good, thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate all the comments.
To the applicants, is there any particular questions you'd like to pose to the commission?
No, I think we really appreciate the feedback. They're very helpful.
Okay, great. I'd love to see this project go. So, okay, thanks everybody. Do we need to take a break or let's take five. And thanks for all the community coming out. Okay, welcome. Are we rolling? Okay, good to know. Okay, well, welcome back. The next item is B3. It's a precise plan, CUP 19-11. It's the Harbor Walk Plaza, located at 833 Embarcadero in Morro Bay here, of course. Are we ready with the presentation? All our technology up and running? Okay, let's give it a try.
We are. Thank you. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. This is 833 Embarcadero, case number CUP 19-11. The project is known as the Harbor Walk Plaza, and this is a precise plan approval of the conditional use permit, so you may have seen this before when it came to the commission as a concept plan approval. In my presentation, I'll go over briefly the history of that. This project is the demolition and reconstruction of an existing two-story visitor-serving commercial building on the Embarcadero. The vicinity map on the screen there shows it near the intersections of Harbor and Embarcadero Road. It is city lease site 87 and 88, 87W and 88W. The project proposes to reconstruct a new two-story mixed-use building with an array of different uses, including restaurant, retail spaces, frozen yogurt shop, outdoor seating on the ground floor, and then on the second floor, establishing 8 boutique hotel rooms, ranging from in size about 250 to 450 square feet for those units. Here is a visual sim that shows you in the lower right corner the existing structure on the right and where my arrow is pointing. And the simulation is of the proposed structure is shown here on the upper image slide. The zoning for this lease site is waterfront in a planned development overlay zone and S4 special treatment zone. It is also located in the original jurisdiction of the Coastal Commission, so that's why we're just looking at a conditional use permit and not also the coastal development permit. Okay, I went over this on the first slide, but here is a summary of the redevelopment proposal. As I stated, there's an existing ground floor restaurant and retail space, very underutilized second floor office space uses that would be replaced with a new approximate 8,000 square foot, 25 foot tall building. Ground floor retail restaurant would also include reconstruction of the existing side tide dock system and relocate the gangway. No change in use is proposed for that dock system, but that would relocate it slightly north about 2.5 feet and slightly west 11 feet to accommodate the public access improvements, which notably for this lease site include installation of 10 feet of bayside lateral access where none currently exist. That is definitely an advantage, positive for this project. It also includes a major redesign of the view corridor and an upgrade of the children's play area, and then also as public benefit, provision of 3 public restrooms on both sides of the building. Here's a site plan of the first floor. There's a lot of red lettering on the screen, and I thought this would come up a little bit more visible, but this is outlining the different uses. The retail would be along the Embarcadero side, the restaurant and bar area toward the rear of the building. Up here at the top in the gray shaded area is that where there is an existing children's play area that would be redesigned, and the view corridor. The project is compliant with the city's waterfront master plan requirements for view corridor. The installation of the harbor walk, and this is the relocated dock and gangway. And currently right now there is a covered patio view impediment that would be removed as part of the project. On this plan, you can also see the public restrooms. There are two over in this area and one on the south side of the building. This is a site, this is a floor plan of the second floor, which shows the eight hotel units and with the elevator and stair access along the southeast corner of the building. I've included in the presentation some slides of the elevations. These are also in your project plans attached to the staff report. This is the north elevation, south elevation, and east and west elevation, which is largely consistent with the concept plan approval the Planning Commission previously saw. And speaking of that previous review by Planning Commission, here's the summary page. So Planning Commission looked at the concept plan CUP on August 21st, 2018. During that public hearing, the Commission ultimately added two conditions to that two conditions to the project. The Planning Commission resolution before you tonight includes those two conditions. And these conditions are that the outdoor table area that is adjacent to the northwest corner of the building be delineated with differential paving material in order to distinguish between public and private seating areas. During that meeting, the Commission had some concern over whether or not the proposed seating that was adjacent to the restaurant in the on the west side of the building, if that would be construed as private or if it could be identified as public seating. So that was that condition. The condition further reads that the outdoor tables shall be delineated at the west side of the building adjacent to the 10-foot width of harbor walk. This project, in addition to the 10-foot width of harbor walk area, also includes 180 square feet of outdoor dining between the harbor walk and the building. And then there's approximately 279 square feet of outdoor dining on the northwest corner. And so that's what this condition is speaking to. The applicants in their precise plan application did denote this outdoor seating area with a change of paver materials, and you'll see the color materials board at the dais before you depicts all of the different materials. And I'm going to call for AGP to come out here and see if we can get this back working here for us. So while he's doing that, the summary of the conversation that the Planning Commission had in August of 2018 included that outdoor public seating area that I've been discussing, the view corridor requirements. The Planning Commission also discussed the children's playground area, the sidewalk width, rooftop treatment, and the proposed green features. That was the summary of the deliberation between amongst the Planning Commission. And ultimately, it centered on the two conditions that I'm discussing now. Should I forward it here with my clicker? Okay. Okay. That second condition was reduce the depth of the proposed planter adjacent to the street sidewalk to increase the sidewalk width. The applicant is showing that on their precise plans that the sidewalk, that the landscape planter has been reduced by 6 inches to accommodate an 8.5-foot sidewalk width. Planning Commission forwarded a favorable recommendation to the City Council, and the City Council looked at this project on October 9th, 2018. Their public hearing ultimately resulted in the addition of four conditions, which are on the screen. These four conditions, no restaurant condiments or table setup shall be allowed, a 4-to-8 capacity bike rack shall be included, a minimum of 3 trash cans, and that the project shall include soft landing material added to the children's play area. The applicant's precise plans do include, do show compliance with all of these four conditions. And then because this is in the original jurisdiction and not within the city's permitting authority for CDPs, it went to the Coastal Commission for approval of the CDP. Coastal Commission approved that in May, on May 8th. And those CDP conditions of approval are added to the project plans, which you'd see as an exhibit in your packet. In addition to the standard conditions of approval that they typically add for commercial projects, there was also wanted to point out that the project is subject to a condition in regards to low-cost visitor-serving accommodations. So for this project, the requirement is that 1 2/3 units be provided at the low-cost rate. And the way that works out is that one unit would be available year-round at a low-cost rate, and a second unit would be available 8 out of 12 months out of the year. The Coastal Commission allowed this pursuant to the Coastal Act. It's also in the city's local coastal plan. It's a fractional number, but the amount of numerous public benefits was offered as mitigation to reduce that number from what could have been a higher number of units to be required to be low cost. So with the precise plan application that's before you tonight, the applicant has included additional submittal details. These include visual simulations, the color and materials board, which we have before you, lighting plan, landscaping plan, a sign program, which includes their public access signs, the construction plan, which is on plan sheet A1.4, and that includes a description of during construction. They do show in a gray shading area the areas that would be maintained as open during construction. That is consistent with some other waterfront lease site projects that have recently gone under construction. And then there's also information on their public access plan. So I'll walk through each of those categories here in the next few slides. The updated visual simulations. This is an image from the street looking west, and you can see the rock in the background. The next image is a new simulation that shows the view corridor and the children's play area. This was one area that the Planning Commission had some questions about and wanted to see some additional information brought back at the precise plan. This shows the redesigned children's area. It also shows that removal of the electrical box, which is currently about in the center of the courtyard, and then there's a covered patio in the rear that is proposed for removal. The children's play structure rides, sculptures, climbing, the benches, they are all compliant with the waterfront master plan in that they would not exceed 30 inches in height. The play area is proposed to be bordered by landscaping and potted planters and installed on DuraTurf bonded rubber surfacing, and that information is included on plan sheet A2.2. That was also in regards to one of the city council conditions. Here's a site plan of the children's play area. It's a little bit hard to see on the screen here, but it does depict the site plan and the various different children's play areas, and then a detail of what each of these images look like. This slide shows the color and materials, which is also, as I said, before you. This depicts the proposed exterior finishes. This includes green metal roofing with a horizontal trespapura siding, cultured stone on the north and the east elevations, and with a dark bronze for the trim and fascia. The harbor walk area is proposed to be consistent with the neighboring harbor walk. That would include the typical stainless cable rail. And then lighting and landscaping. The lighting plan is shown on plan sheet A1.7, which depicts some slant-style downward-facing sconces, wall-mounted, as well as bollard-style lighting in the play area. And then on the screen here, I just snipped a few images of the landscaping, which was a little bit smaller on the plans, and hope that this could be a little bit more visible. The landscaping is minimal through the site. It's shown on plan sheet A4.1, and what it does include is an array of concrete-formed pots throughout the lease site, utilizing a mix of succulents and drought-tolerant landscaping, as well as what you saw at the concept plan, which is the rooftop garden boxes, which is also in the precise plan. The sign program is included in the project. Excuse me. And the applicant is proposing a mix of wall signs, pub-style signs, and two wall-mounted suite signs to be used for directory purposes. Here, the applicant is not requesting to exceed what the basic sign allowance would be. They're proposing 82 square feet of signage, where 99.5 would be allowed ordinarily. The proposed signage is also visible on elevation sheets A3.1 and looks like this. It's a materials consists of wood sign panels with cream-colored sign backing, and the sign materials are consistent throughout the building. And as consistent with our other recently approved projects on the waterfront, this is the standard coastal access signage, also approved by Coastal, which depicts the sign in the upper left is that this is the sign depicting that seating available for public use, no purchase necessary. The site plan does depict the locations where these signs would be. Morro Bay Harbor Walk, our Harbor Walk is also very similar to the name of this business development, but this is referring to the city's Bay-wide Harbor Walk, and that would be along that Bayside lateral access. One thing that the sign program did not include, and that is a detail for the public bathroom sign. So as part of the proposed public benefit, there are three proposed public bathrooms for this lease site. However, one of the public bathrooms is located inside the restaurant. That's where you would access it from. And so in order to ensure that the public is aware that this is a public bathroom and you don't need to buy something at the restaurant to use that bathroom, staff is recommending that planning condition 18 be added. It's in your resolution, which would require that a submittal of a public bathroom sign design be approved by the community development director with the building permit application. And that would be a sign on the bathroom door and then a sign outside the building letting the public know that there is another public bathroom available for use. Here is the public access plan. And one thing I did want to note for the commission's review is that staff is also recommending that planning condition 5 be added. And planning condition 5 is recommending that all dock materials are consistent. Currently, there is two feet of fiberglass decking along the length of the harbor walk, and planning condition 5 would require that all dock materials are consistent in order to be compliant with the DWSP. And under CEQA, the environmental determination is not changed. During the concept plan, it was deemed to be categorically exempt. There have been no project changes that have occurred with the precise plan that would alter that environmental determination. We have incorporated BMPs into the project. Those planning conditions 12 through 17 are the same conditions that the commission has previously seen. In regards to the downtown waterfront strategic plan, this was adopted by council in early 2018, and we included a consistency analysis in the staff report to cover the 8 categories that are in the DWSP with regard to buildings, character-defining elements, design materials, connectivity, signage, public street furnishings, and lighting. And that analysis determined that the project was consistent with these guidelines and that the project redesigns and proposes a new building that opens up the bay views and provides for pedestrian accessibility to the bay. It creates that 10 feet of bayside lateral access where none currently exists. It proposes a nautical design theme with a proposed commercial signage and a whimsical nautical themed children's play area. It also includes enhanced amenities such as benches, a wave style bicycle rack, and other amenities to encourage use of the site. And in conclusion, as stated in the staff report, the project has been reviewed by the Planning Commission and the City Council with the approval of the concept plan. Tonight before you is the precise plan approval. The zoning code requires that the Planning Commission make a finding that the precise plan is in substantial conformance with the concept plan. The staff report walks through that, making that determination, and that finding is included in your Planning Commission resolution. Project represents a great opportunity to revitalize an underutilized waterfront lease site. It creates a mix of interesting uses. Importantly for the city, it also provides that extension of the Harbor Walk access where none currently exists, and also provides a significant public benefit in the form of additional outdoor public seating, a remodeled view corridor, three public restrooms, as well as ecological exhibits and other educational viewfinder periscope along the waterfront. The applicant is also seeking LEED certification, and those green building features have been also incorporated into the plans. So therefore, it's staff's recommendation that the Planning Commission conditionally approve the project by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 2819, which includes the findings and conditions of approval. And I'm available to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any ex parte communications? Okay, do we have any questions for staff?
One question, and it may even be for the applicant, it may be for the state. How do you determine who's low cost or low income and gets the low cost room?
There is a methodology that the Coastal Commission goes into great detail. The low cost is equal to the area's low cost threshold. So, and I think Scott might be a better explaining at this than I, but essentially the Coastal Commission requires that the rooms are available, but there's
no way to, like Bill Gates could come in and get it.
Exactly. So okay. It's a bit like Yosemite, like, you know, at a certain time of the year. It's like mm-hmm. first come, first serve.
You might win the lottery or you might not.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going on, you know, hotels.com and you're looking for a room. And if you just happen to click on the link at the time that they have one room available, then I don't know that that's true, but that's kind of in my mind what it must look like, you know, like, oh, I got a lower room rate.
That is like a bureaucrat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stupid.
But, you know, the idea is that the coastal access is that there should be equal access to the coast. What the Coastal Commission has told the city is that the Embarcadero is a special, unique place, and that while in the past the city has been able to approve hotel projects and pay an in-lieu fee, mm-hmm. And in their interpretation, the Embarcadero is something that that the low-cost accommodation should really be on-site, that it is such a unique thing and that it should be available to all Californians. So they're really, you know, trying to push that, you know, there is mm-hmm. on-site accommodations available. And it just, it's not much, but it's also a small okay. hotel, too. Yeah.
Strange.
During the construction of the, the remodel, TI, I should say, at the port house, the old Otter Rock, there was a pedestrian access issue, you know, and I'm wondering if we could possibly incorporate into the plan some sort of a pedestrian access, maybe even, you know, prohibiting parking in front of
the project so that we can, you know, guide pedestrians into the street or keep people flowing down the Embarcadero better than we did on the Yacht Rock TI.
Do you mean like during the construction?
During construction. So, I mean, okay. I realize they're going to have to, you know, they need room. I mean, I get that. I just maybe kind of looking into that a little bit closer, making sure we have, and, you know, I'm going to get on my bandstand and say my accessibility thing. But, I mean, I saw, you know, little old ladies in walkers and, you know, people in those little, you know, whatever they call them, you know.
It's you're all aware, down on the waterfront is tight. Right, these are small lease sites. The room to maneuver, do construction down these things is it's not a simple process. They're constrained. So that was mostly inside of the building, right, on the one that you were talking about for the porthouse. They did have times when we needed to have the sidewalk closed. We were as cognizant of that as we could be. In fact, we went down there a few different times and told them to open the sidewalk back up when they were supposed to have it open. So we do monitor that, both through building and our public works department in the form of they get encroachment permits to do work in the right-of-way. The balancing act is you put too many constraints on them, then they're down there longer than they need to be. You know, you want them in there and out. So we try to, you know, that's the balancing thing that we weigh on the staff side of things when we're dealing with folks that are doing work on the waterfront is we don't want to be too restrictive with them. But we don't also want to have them unnecessarily closing down the sidewalk when they don't need to, meaning it's fine for them to have it closed down typically when they're bringing materials and that type of thing on site, and that's usually how we limit it. They might have a certain number of days where they're doing something specifically that they need to close it down, but then other than that, we would have it open.
I think specifically what I was talking about is, I mean, obviously they're going to do a significant demolition. So, I mean, there's going to be roll-offs, there's going to be trucks, mm-hmm. there's going to be traffic, and that's unavoidable. I guess what I was saying is maybe give pedestrian access and pedestrian plan, prohibit parking in front of maybe Libertine and, you know, guide these folks down a ramp, you know, put some, maybe construct some modified ramps that they can at least, I mean, maybe may not be ADA compliant, but I mean, at least kind of get them down the curb, into the, you know, the street area and block off that parking so that there's room for the pedestrians to be there and then get back onto the sidewalk, maybe a little bit further downstream. I'm just saying maybe more of a thought process towards that pedestrian access and maintaining, that for
yeah, I mean, I'm happy to look at that and to discuss it with our public works department about what they want to have out in the right of way and what they don't. And I'm happy to do that. I think that, you know, for the porthouse project, I think we could have done a little bit better job on that. I mean, I don't disagree with what you said. And we had to go down there and kind of remind them several times about that. So, I mean, I think we do need to do, you know, something a little bit more. Especially when you're taking a whole lease site down.
And I think if we just formalize it a little bit more and maybe put it in an actual plan, I've worked construction, so I mean, you give those guys a plan and say, well, you know, and gals, you know, you got to do this, you got to maintain this, and you know, it just puts it in their head. So,
yeah, plywood barrier walls with a, you know, protective roof that basically takes over those parking areas, and then they'll have the. So like you said, it extends into the parking spots, but is protective and also
right.
I mean, this directional.
This is smack in the middle of where everybody's at. And, you know, we're going to be walking down there, and, you know, we're going to be having festivals probably, and
I mean, they're not different than the Yacht Rock. There's going to be times when the sidewalk is entirely closed. Yeah. I mean, they're bringing equipment on and off the site. I mean, there's no – you have to direct them to go across the street if they want to go by it. I mean, that's –
absolutely.
That's what you have to do that. Just it's too constrained down there. There's no, we don't have a choice.
Right.
But I don't disagree that we could do a better job. I didn't think that we did a great job with the porthouse. So
appreciate the effort.
Yeah.
They do construction in New York City, so we should be able to handle it here. Any other questions for staff?
Susan's comment was I was going to ask the same question. I think that the answer is just. Astounding. So this is a statewide program promulgated by the Coastal Commission, and there's really no effort to in any way increase the odds that a low-income person might actually be able to rent one of these rooms?
Well, it's not intended for low-income people. What it's intended for is it's intended to make available equal opportunity to the coast. So, you know, the idea is that, yes, it would be most likely for a lower-income person because, you know, they can't afford to rent a waterfront Embarcadero hotel. Maybe they can only afford, you know, Motel 6 or, you know, nothing against Motel 6, but, I mean, equal opportunity. So you're inland, you're at Motel 6 on Atascadero Road, but you want to be on the coast. So the idea is that it is making, a range of coastal experiences available to people, to all Californians. And, you know, for what it's worth, you know, like I said previously, this is in our local coastal plan, and it's in the Coastal Act. So I think it's been a priority of the Coastal Commission in the last several years because it hasn't always been strictly enforced, and the Coastal Act has been around since the 1970s. The Coastal Commission themselves has wanted to see that more strictly enforced.
Okay, at this point we'll open it up for public comment. Would the applicant like to make a presentation?
Oh, I don't think so. I'm good. Yeah. Okay. Oh, good evening, Planning Commission, everybody. My name is Charisse Hansen. I own Under the Sea Gallery at the address 833 Embarcadero for 21 years. And I'm part of the TLC Family Enterprises that is doing this, and you've met me. Well, some of you have met me before. Okay, so to begin, I did a little PowerPoint presentation. So the next slide. Speaking about construction, this is a banner that I put together that I'm going to put on the building right now and put on it on the fencing when we do the construction, because this building has been slowly dilapidating and becoming a blight on the Embarcadero for the last year and a half. I've really tried to take a spin on it and really show how we're moving forward and we're doing something exciting, and this is not a sad thing that the restaurant's closed. This is going to be good, and it's going to be a really great reinvigorating of Morro Bay. Let's go. Great. Yep. Did I skip one? No. Okay. So as far as adhering to the waterfront master plan, we've made this our go-to. It's been everything to every answer that we've put together to make this project. This building has a history of not moving forward at a quick pace, which a lot of places down on the Embarcadero have fallen victim to. And so it being in the center, in my opinion, of the Embarcadero, it really needs to follow the natural path of getting everything accomplished, and the waterfront master plan is the way that we wanted to do that. So we're giving everybody what they asked for. RFP reflected the same things that were in the waterfront master plan, as well as adding some other features, which we met and then went above and beyond what they asked for, mainly because it was actually what we wanted in this space, and it's what really works. And as far as the massive building part, that was something in the waterfront master plan, and it's something that this particular area, they kept trying to combine, put a conference center, do a giant hotel, and I think that our building fits exactly into what it is that you want to see as far as the size of a building, and we're going to have the view corridor, a nice big view corridor, and then depending on what happens with the Libertine, they were going to move over 10 feet, but we're allowing more views to be going through as far as being able to see the rock, and I think that that's a good feature. And then color and attractiveness. The site requires pretty much a rectangular structure based on the guideline. Our project allows for the best use of the space, as well as maximizing the area, but also every single square foot is nice to look at as well, and you get a view corridor. So, and the WMP is written as a guideline to follow through what the community envisions for the Embarcadero. Daily, I'm reassured by talking to people who come by the shop that we're on the right path. All of our plans are up on the wall for them to see, and I often ask them what it is that they would like to see, and current residents and visitors are happily anticipating everything that we're bringing forward. So building aesthetics, we're retaining the cultural identity of the Embarcadero while at the same time evolving with current architectural advances. Swatches, very complementary tones and ecologically manufactured. The stone is actually called coral fossils, so the planks, which are, we'll go into that. And next. So we're using tempura puro aged ash, which I think has a good tone to it that kind of looks like the boats that we want to reflect on the Embarcadero. This is 70% wood-based fibers, and what I was thinking is it's like the Million Dollar Man. It's like an upgraded version of wood, and it's going to last through time, and it's going to be easy to take care of and look great the entire time. When we first were looking at different products, they brought to us two samples. One was from a barn that had been up for, 50 years, Travis? And then a brand new sample of the same exact wood, or... Yeah. you couldn't tell the difference. They look the exact same, which is awesome because it doesn't look fake and it's going to wear like at its best tone, you know, not at the newest where it's going to be better if it gets a little aged or, you know, it's there. It's at its primo state. All right. LEED certification, it's something that we've... Any environmentally friendly buildings is what TLC Family Industries Enterprises is about. We have the rooftop solar 10 kW system with kilowatts. I did know that, but I'm so nervous. And 38 panels. We have a rain water collection and biofiltration, rooftop garden boxes, solar shading, hotel rooms with smart controls. That's going to be a fun thing for us to learn all about, and we're really excited about that knowledge that we're going to gain. And we're going to have enclosed employee bike storage. So like you saw the four spaces in the front, there's also going to be storage for employees as well, of which I even give a dollar. I give money for people who don't drive their car to work. And well, me too. All right. Next is signage. So everything is going to be still a work in progress as far as like the branding. We have a marketing company that is going to help us on the entire plaza as well as with the inn. And so we really want to create signage that you know where you are, for one, and you know where you want to go, and not get a whole bunch of information that you don't actually that confuses you and doesn't make you feel like you know where you're at. I've spent 20 years with people thinking that I was either the Outrigger restaurant or off the hook when I was under the Sea Gallery, right there. So ours are going to be very easily read, well placed, and correctly lit. Okay, this is a storyboard that I put up at the shop and posted on social media just to kind of give a taste of what the interior and some of the exterior and kind of the branding that we want to do with the Harbor Walk-In. We want to do classy, refined, clean, but definitely staying with the ocean motif and the fresh air. Oh, and local artist as well. And then here's Under the Sea Gallery. So we're actually going to have two retail shops. One is going to be more of a convenience store, which currently we need on the Embarcadero. But in addition to all these new hotels that are going in, I think it's going to be a really good addition to the Embarcadero without getting into anybody else's line that they carry. But this is Under the Sea Gallery, so I get to get a little higher end on one side and a little lower end on the other side and complement each other at the same time. All right, so here's the play area. And the play area is just a great thing that we need in Morro Bay. And it's something that there's so many things to do in Morro Bay, but as far as entertainment, we need more than just shopping, more than just eating on the Embarcadero. This will get them to stay here longer. This will get them to relax here longer. And so the surfaces that we want to put in are definitely going to be soft. And so we're going to play around with what it is, but this is the typical idea. There's a lot of different companies out there. The important things that we're looking for in the final product that we pick is that it's going to be easily cleaned, possibly replaceable, and soft. The other part where I write replaceable and fresh is that we are having quite a few different play structures be erected. And so as one ages out, we can swap them out. So there's never going to be one giant thing that we just wait until it gets beyond its stay and then we take it out. They're always going to be kind of swapped out and maintained. And so it's going to look nice all year round, all 50 plus years around. Additional benefits. I'll just read them. Compared to approved similar properties, Harborwalk Plaza exceeds the significant criteria for public benefit. TLC family understands the needs specific to this location based on our family history, what, four generations of being on the Embarcadero? And one to go? Yeah. Ours. As business owners of retail shops and restaurants, we understand optimal and efficient interior and exterior layouts. With how many years that I've been doing this, I always take into consideration the utilitarianism of where they put meters and where they put the mailbox and how is the entrance and what's the flow. And I get to do this from the ground up, so I think we're doing a really good job and thinking about every single part. And that leads to aesthetically pleasing flow and function. And there we go. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. Would anybody else like to speak to this project? Okay, seeing none, I'll probably have you come back up and we'll, if there's any questions. Do we have any questions for the applicant? Let's see. Michael? Susan?
I only have one.
Okay. Could you please come back to the podium?
This might be more for Chris Parker.
Okay.
I look at the section on A3.2 in here, which shows the mechanical equipment screen, and it looks like the equipment goes higher than the screen, and I'm just wondering, with all the other second-level potential of things in the Embarcadero and across the street and the things on the bluff, is the screening high enough to really cover the equipment up there? Because it's a pretty large area, too, from the bluff top people kind of looking across the roofscape into that.
It is a large area, though it's tucked back. And as far as from the bluff top area, it's tucked behind what would be the elevator portion of it.
Yeah.
And also what we've included along that side, if you look at the roof plan, there are on those where we have the screening, like such as at the elevator and the screening at that mechanical well, we've included some solar awnings to attach to the sides of those to take advantage of, you know, some more solar panel placements. But the actual kitchen, that was the hard part. It's the kitchen equipment, basically, for the exhaust fan systems. We have them placed in there where they take up the least amount of space because we have to duct everything and get it through the hotel space. So I've tried to pull them in from the structure as much as possible and then try to locate that. It's somewhat central to the building, but central and west of the center point, so to keep it away from the focal points of the structure.
Yeah, I think I guess my only concern is probably people from the northeast that would be on the bluff across and to the north.
So to the north, you're going to have planter boxes that are up there as well that are going to be obstructing the mechanical wells, because those got moved to the north side of the structure so that we had more room for solar panels as well. So from the north edge, which I presume would be more possibly Blue Cell Inn-ish, that direction looking down, you're going to see the multiple planter boxes and the front element of the structure that has the stone facade, the main planter box area, and that's going to break that up, I believe.
And the use of the stone on the facade with the hotel logo in front of it, that's just to kind of highlight, pop out the logo from how the darker materials on the building?
Yeah, it's to do that and to kind of just break up that corner of the structure as well. Because that one element has the flat roof element to it, so things kind of just change up a little bit there.
And the rain catchment pieces, maybe I missed those. What do they look like?
They
have a color?
They have a color I think we can choose. They're kind of a molded plastic color. I do show them. You can somewhat see them in
they're on the elevation. I saw
they're on the elevation, just dotted in. But I show them in the rendering, the view corridor rendering. I have them more of a green tone right now. We kind of want them to stand out because we're going to have these lead items around the site, and we kind of want to draw attention to them where we can. So the ones we're looking at, they're a water hog, and they actually have a neater appearance to them. They're more of a rectangular cube shape, and they kind of they're modular, can stack together. So if you're looking there, you can kind of see they're more the green item past the restroom.
Okay, that's all I've got.
No problem. Anybody else? Any other questions? excuse me. I'm fighting off this cold. this would be more for operations. Sorry. How are you going to handle the day-to-day operations, such as linen, such as taking reservations, getting keys to people, getting keys back?
That is a big thing that we have different plans to. It's going to be something that we pick a certain POS system that guides that, and so we're working right now with what kind of operations are going to be within the rooms and how we're going to do the entry. But through the convenience store, we're going to have an accessible window for them to talk to a customer service who's there all the time. And then we're also going to have a person on staff on location at all times that will guide them to their rooms, that will have the ability to be called to take them and help them, as well as the valet feature that we're going to have. As far as how we're going to market the rooms and take the calls, that's going to be decided during getting closer to that, if we're going to be completely off-site or hands-on with taking reservations and phones. Most likely there will be a company that we will hire to take care of the bookings that will all be electronic with emails and correspondence that way. Right, keyless entry, and we've gone to a couple of different places, and we're trying to see which one is going to fit the best with us. There's, what is that place called, the Bachelor or the Butler? There's you can go from not even talking to any of the customers, and then you can go to the Andersons, you know, who are full service, sweet as pie, welcome you in. We're going to be somewhere in there. We're going to be techie, but we're going to be friendly. We have a little bit to learn, but we got two plus years to get that under our belt, and we're excited about it. We're actually really kind of we're happy to be in the hospitality industry and be able to be there and say hi to everybody.
So, I didn't notice a on-site laundry on.
Oh yes, there, so. Did. The on-site laundry.
Okay.
So if you embedded within the convenience store, there's a back office, and that's going to be where the washroom is. Okay. There's two modes of entry. Well, one mode of entry now? Yeah, one mode of entry through a side door in the convenience, so the laundry can be, and it's right next to the elevator, so the elevator, and then you bring it in.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And then there's off-site if we wanted to, yeah. But for right now we're planning on on-site.
Okay. Is there any other questions now? No? Okay. Thank you very much. We'll bring this back to the commission now. And comments and discussion? Go ahead, Jess.
I have two thoughts. One's a little bit frivolous probably, and one's more serious. And it's with respect to the play area, and I can't offer any comment on whether any of those toys are suitable or whatever. But my wife is a docent with the elephant seals, and believe it or not, something like 900,000 people show up where the elephant seals are, and there's no food, there's no water, there's no restrooms, there's not even chairs. I keep telling her it's this enormous economic opportunity that's not being exploited. And I think Morro Bay should be sort of like the jumping off place for the elephant seals. So what am I getting at? I was driving through Cambria when they had the scarecrow business, and there were a couple of wonderful sculptures of elephant seals on bicycles, very amusing. And I wonder if you could create an elephant seal little child ride-on business. And it would sort of remind people of what's up there, and maybe they should go visit and take a room in Morro Bay and drive up there, et cetera, et cetera. That's one thought. The other thought is a little more serious. The facility just to the south, which I guess is the Libertine, in front of it has the narrowest sidewalk, I believe, on the Embarcadero, exacerbated by the fact there's a lamppost about halfway through it. This is a recommendation to the city council, I suppose, to use some of their scarce municipal resources. You know, maybe while we're doing all the disruptive construction of your place, we could do, eliminate the parking space in front of the Libertine and maybe do a little sidewalk bump out. We need to do something there now, and maybe we could work out some deal whereby the city spends the money, and then at some time in the future when the Libertine is remodeled, they reimburse the city for something. But it just drives me crazy when, more often than not, people end up walking in the sidewalk because they can't possibly get past that little narrow spot. I just wish we could do something about that now. Those are my thoughts.
Jesse.
I just have the same comment I had earlier, just access, you know, keeping access. And it sounds like you guys have been down there forever, so you know that, you know, you're in a very important spot, you're at choke point, you know, everybody's that's on the Embarcadero is walking past your spot. So please mindful of keeping traffic going, the pedestrian traffic going, keeping the pedestrian traffic safe as possible. And you know, you have a daunting task trying to tear this big old building down right there in the middle of everything. So, please do good.
Okay. Michael? Comments, discussions?
No, I appreciate seeing that, you know, we've got the lead items in a building finally. We rarely see those. We hear promises about them, but we rarely see them. So I'm really happy about that, and I think the building in general fits in with the kind of architecture that's been developing down there.
I'm kind of the cranky curmudgeon about whimsical toys. I think if you're trying to do a classy hotel, the last thing you want to put out there is a bunch of kitsch toys, but that's my curmudgeonness showing up. I don't think you need that many. When I watch kids play around things, they do more running and things than I think you might have anticipated here. I think it looks claustrophobic, but I like the perimeter of it because people will sit on that perimeter. Of all the seating and things that are supplied, I think the most ingenious thing was putting those whimsical toys inside that container because I like that. Whatever you're going to put inside, I like the container. And I like the lighter color masonry. I think it helps lighten the building feel. And I love that we've got the Harbor Walk connected. I think it's a little, the one piece that was up on the board is it implies the public space goes around to the south, and it only does so if you go up to the second level. The first level's blockaded on the first floor because of the stair at the end. So if people are looking on that, you're not going to be able to walk around the south unless you go up to the upper level and then walk down the stairs again. But I do think everything else I think is very reasonable. I think you know, Chris has done a nice job on the outside with a very simple kind of architecture. I'm not a fan of stone, but I understand why you want it there and in that particular place. I think on the wall where the logo is on the side, I think it's effective. I don't think it's as effective in the pediment on the front toward the Embarcadero. I don't know that I think that looks attractive personally, but that's just might be my minor curmudgeon point on this one, along with the whimsical toys. But other than that, I think it's great. Happy to support it.
Susan?
Well, just because I love to contradict Michael, I think the whimsical toys are great. I do think children are going to enjoy them. I know when my kids were little, they loved all the fantasy stuff at Tidelands Park. And I agree that we need a place on the waterfront area for little kids to just burn off steam and hang out and play while their parents get to either sit on the edge of those benches and relax or look around at the shops. I didn't get to see this project when, you know, a year ago I wasn't on the commission. But I think it's exciting, and I think you guys have really thought it through, bringing in a lot of great elements that are good for the town, and can't wait for the 2 years to be up. See what you do.
Okay, great. I agree. You know, I think Michael's dead on you give somebody a toy and they play with a box. So, I think that's going to be – I like the containment on that. So the only other thing, you know, this is more my wish is if we had some way that we could, when we bring these hotel rooms in, that we create a in lieu fee for upgrading, you know, for the EV charging in the public parking places where these people are going to be coming. I have to say that when I look for a, you know, when I look for a hotel or somewhere, you know, we will take our Chevy Bolt and we will go to a place that has a level 2 charger where we can charge it overnight. We've done that in San Francisco and stuff. So if, you know, I've been told and admonished that I can't condition these projects to do that because it's putting effort into public spaces, but I think as from the hotelier side and through your organization, I think that you guys can put pressure on and create more pressure to put EV chargers in the public parking places. And because the first thing people are going to be doing is to look and see if they can't charge their car, they're not going to stay here. And you're going to be losing about 10% of the population right off the bat. So I would just hope that somehow we get pressure put on.
And the only other thing I'd say is just I'd like to see a little bit added to the Planning Commission number 9, condition number 9, and just saying that internally illuminated signs shall not be allowed. I know you haven't proposed any, and it's not a, they're not allowed on the Embarcadero, but we've had problems with people coming back later thinking that they could put them in. So I'd just like to be perfectly clear on that. And other than that, do we have any discussion on the addition for the condition?
Which condition are we talking about?
We're talking about signage. Just on number 9 on the PC conditions.
I personally don't think it's necessary. I think staff would shoot that down as soon as it came up, right?
Well, we've had a person come in, and it was an issue. So on a different project, and they had already bought the sign. So that's all I'm saying. So, but you know,
I don't think it hurts to add a constraint like that. I think that's one of the most offensive things we have in town is the internally lighted sign. So.
I'm not opposed to it. If it makes it go, yeah, sure.
The ink is cheap at this point. You know. Okay, so with that change, do we have a motion?
I'll move that we adopt resolution PC 28-19 with the amendment to Planning Commission Condition 9 prohibiting interior illuminated signs.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, could you call the question, please?
Commissioner Lucas.
Aye.
Commissioner Stewart.
Aye.
Commissioner Barone.
Aye.
Commissioner Ingraffia.
Aye.
Chair Lohr.
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go forth and build.
Quickly.
Okay. Moving on, we have no new business. We have no unfinished business. So, planning commissioners' comments and future agenda items.
I have a comment just to let the rest of the commission know. I'm on the committee that is looking at the short-term vacation rental ordinance for the city. There are 8 of us on there, along with city manager, the mayor, and Marlis McPherson. We're meeting at least once, if not twice a week. We'll see how that goes. And the goal is to develop something that has a consensus in this community. And we do have representatives from just basic homeowners. We have people who own vacation rentals. We have vacation rental managers. And we have hoteliers. And people have lived here many, many, many years. And some maybe not so long. So it's a pretty good cross-section. It's a good group. Everybody's been really civil. And I think, again, the goal is that if we as a committee can come together with a plan that we have some amount of community consensus on, that what has been seen is that Planning Commission tends to approve whatever the plan is when there's community consensus. So even if it may be something where, gee, we don't like caps, if the community has come together and said, well, we want this cap, they may approve it. So it, of course, will come before Planning Commission, right, eventually?
Yeah, it'll come before Planning Commission for recommendation to City Council, then mm-hmm. City Council, because it'll be an ordinance. We'll have 2 meetings on it, introduction and then adoption, and then we send it to Coastal for certification.
Yeah, so it's an interesting process, a lot of research and background information, and as it comes forward, I'll try and fill you in on details of the background of it, because it's good. It's a good process, and this was an alternative to hiring a consultant to create, an ordinance for us. And so I think this will be very moral-based specific. So just putting it out there, let you all know.
Yeah, it's great.
It's in the works.
Good luck.
Thanks for the work
mm-hmm.
on it. Okay. Any other comments?
Yeah, just an announcement. There'll be a special WRF CAC meeting Wednesday, November 20th, 3 to 5 right here. My understanding is we'll be getting some very specific engineering, Scott. Is that true? Or is that what I was led to believe anyway, because I spoke to Mr. Collins, the city manager, that he was saying we're going to have a couple weeks to review.
That's my understanding. Yes.
So we should be getting
on it? Yes.
We should be getting an agenda. I'm sorry. We should be getting there'll be a set of plans at City Hall to review, but the cost is pretty high to produce many sets of plans. So the public, I'm under the impression, is allowed to view these plans.
I believe so. Yep.
And those will be at City Hall, or those will be at your
probably
office?
Probably in Public Services Building.
Okay, yeah. So it'll be at your office.
Our building. Yeah. Where you come pick up your packets.
And if you have any questions, please contact Janine.
Yeah, you can contact Janine. Yeah, that's probably
Janine Burlingame.
So. Yep.
Okay.
I do have one question. One of the citizens asked me this week about a tentative timeline on the review of the general plan again. Are we looking maybe December, January?
So where we're at right now is well, if Martha wouldn't have changed to her own company, I would have all of the what used to be subs with Michael Baker under contract with the city. We are moving forward right now with the update of the deep general plan and LCP portion of it. Amy's putting together Sinsheimer is putting together that update based on all of the comments that were received through Coastal and from the commission. I think I referenced this before. We have a big spreadsheet with all of those in there, and it also says what we're doing about it. And so you can see what you said and gave direction on, and then it tells you what we went and did. And she's working through all that. So my take is we probably have a couple more weeks before we get an administrative draft of the final, which will be the final draft of Plan Morro Bay. It'll probably take myself and Cindy a couple of weeks to go through it all. We'll have to reach out, and once we have that kind of piece of it done, we'll have to reach out to Coastal and go over a couple of the items that they gave us some direction on, and they kind of said it's up to you how you want to do it, but that's never great, so you always want to go back and circle back around on those two items. So my thought is we'll probably be at a point where we have a public draft of Plan Morro Bay, the final draft, back out on the street after the first of the year. And then we'll be revising the EIR because a bunch of the, sections have changed. The EIR has to be updated. And that'll also start the kickoff for Martha Miller to start back on the zoning code update piece to pick up the new policy direction provided by Coastal mostly. We're anticipating bringing this forward in the spring for hearings at Planning Commission. Probably anticipating 3 to 4 meetings with the Planning Commission and then recommendation on to City Council. You've seen it before. It's just been a while. At a minimum, we'll be taking the EIR for adoption to council no later than the second meeting in June because the California Environmental Quality Act has changed how they deal with traffic, and our traffic analysis is based on level of service and not vehicle miles traveled for a very good reason. We have a lot of visitors to this town, and it's very difficult to mitigate that. If we're doing the document forward after July 1, then we have to use VMT as the threshold, which would be a problem. So if we don't have the document ready, we will definitely have the EIR done, and then we might have to follow back if we're doing more, still doing work on the DPLCP and zoning code. So that's the timeline as it stands today.
All right. Was there any other further comments other than?
Oh, for mine? Yeah, I got a couple for you. So today I've been telling you about this for a while, and Commissioner Stewart's comments about the vacation rental ordinance sort of
thought I might bring this up. I mentioned that we are, you know, contracted with Host Compliance to do the vacation rental monitoring. We did that training today on that, so we'll be up and running with that. We're going to give them our letters, warning letters that go out automatically, or ones that we can initiate tomorrow to have them take a look at. And then probably we'll be sending out warning letters to all those that are unlicensed within the next couple of weeks. So we're starting the enforcement process now based on our current ordinance. And the second item I wanted to bring up, based on comments from Chair Luer, was EV charging stations for city property. Had a meeting today on that. There's some grant funding available, short timeline. Met with a person that's we have to get a quote from. We need two quotes before we can apply for the grant through the state. It's for $150,000, so we'll be able to put a couple of stations in with it. And then we're going to try to get quotes for three different locations because right after the beginning of the year, it'll start a new cycle, and we'll be able to submit applications underneath that, and then we'll have other products. So we might be able to get, you know, within the next maybe 12 to 18 months, two separate EV charging station projects put in. Probably be a couple of fast chargers and a couple of level twos, in each one of those. So probably be three to four charging stations for each project. So those two, and we're going to get quotes for at least two locations, maybe three, because we'd have kind of shovel-ready projects for the next 3 years. Because the grant funding cycle is supposed to extend, you know, reauthorize each year, and we'd be like, here's our one for this year. Here's our one for this year, and we're on a map that shows that we're deficient here. Obviously, we're on Highway 1. There's a big hole here, so that's good news and something that come forward pretty quickly. So, thought I'd mention that. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I thought so. I was kind of excited about that. And so your comments earlier was poignant, I think. So, yeah, timely.
Sounds good. I'm sorry. We'll adjourn to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting at Surf Street on November 19th, 6 p.m. Thank you, everybody.
Do you want these
back,
Scott?
Oh, yeah.